So am I still waiting? Waiting a long time.
Waiting for tonight.
Listen to review, mate.
Right now, right? That's what you say. We get it by now.
Before we go any further, let's clear one thing up. Do you work for the WWE?
No.
How about it?
No. Forget about the past, Chico. Let's worry about the future. We want to know who your three guys are. Is it the Nacho Man? I don't think so. And what about the immortal Huckster? You know, you tell billionaire Ted to break out the money and get anybody he can, because the big man and the medium-sized man and our surprise buddy are gonna carve them up.
I want to ask you a question right now. He's had his say.
Who are they? Come
I
on.
Can't tell you. I'll tell you tomorrow night on Nitro. That's the deal.
You can't tell us? You don't jack us around. Don't jack us around.
Oh, for Christ. Whoa. What are they doing?
Security. Get up there right now.
Get somebody security up there. Unbelievable.
Please. Please get him.
Unbelievable.
This is sick.
Yeah, Tony, I got it. Hold on. Where's he at?
He's right down below us here.
Oh, my God.
We're going to need some medical attention right now.
Yes.
Right now. Ladies and gentlemen.
Big boys, they just left the building.
Hey, get these guys off here. Cut this thing off. Get some.
We have some medical. This is sick.
The drone plays everything. The one true David Williams say. The turn from a lot of frustration. The grace loves condemnation. Better to live a lie than not to see it die. It's better to be alone than sitting by Dr. Stone.
Okay, we'll chat more about this show. We're on the show. Or is this the show?
I don't know. Are you recording?
I am.
Oh, okay.
No, now it's part of the show.
Oh, wow. All
right. Oh, there's so much fun stuff to do today. Oh, I gotta get my computer. It's been so long.
Yeah.
Like, it's really big.
I like this room better, actually.
I can look at you two when we're talking.
Yeah, that's true. Well, until you get on the phone.
Soon we should actually make this into an actual video thing.
You guys, why don't you guys just throw this up on YouTube, like, anytime you guys record these?
Yeah, we gotta make the YouTube one special.
There's also something about recording without cameras that I feel like makes me feel a little bit more relaxed.
Yeah, the
feels a little bit different.
I've noticed, though, on the show, because at first when you guys introduced the cameras, you could tell, like, obviously because of the theme song and everything, you could tell when the cameras went on because your personalities would change slightly. Like, you both would be, like, obviously, you know, like everyone does. You have to play to the camera.
Yeah.
But now I've noticed it's, like, more and more kind of seep between.
So
they're both very natural.
Yeah, I guess we've done it for a year, so.
Yeah, exactly.
Better at it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's amazing. That's crazy how long you listen to this podcast. How deep you go with this thing.
It's very crazy, yes.
We've known each other now, guys, for, like.
A few years.
5 years?
Wow, that's a long time.
That's a long time.
Where we met on the
Queen Street West.
Before the birth of your second child, right?
Before my second kid, yeah.
Wow. Back when you only had one kid.
Back when it was like I had a pet back then.
You know, it doesn't even really count.
No, it does not. Really, compared to now, it's like a blip.
Yeah.
A blip.
So this is Review Away.
Yeah.
I'm John Pollock with Wei Ting. Yeah. And if you haven't guessed by now.
You don't know who I am.
It's Damian Abraham.
I don't care why.
Where the everyone is rejoicing right now in their earbuds, Damien.
Yes, there's actually like I was hit up by multiple people asking when I was going to come back on and be able to join you guys, and I said
I was hit up by this one account on Twitter who was also asking.
Was it at me? At Liver Damien?
It was Damien asking when Damien was coming back on the show.
I was quoting a tweet also asking you when I was coming back on the show.
Well, here you are.
I've been asking way, way longer than I've been asking you. I didn't come to you till I had evidence.
You better be honored that you're here.
I'm honored.
Wei does not like the guests. I get the impression.
Why would
that's
you
me.
Say, why
that's
would you
me
say
assuming.
That?
That's me get trying
why
to get
would,
into.
Why
your
would
head.
You assume that?
I would hate guests if I were you.
Why would you say that?
Because I have a paranoia when we have guests on that it's going to become a power talk and you're going to be fighting to get in words. You're not a commanding voice, Wei.
It doesn't mean I don't like it.
I would hate that if this just became you two.
Listen, every show needs.
So I'm going to shut up for the next
hour. Every show needs an Ed McMahon, okay? Every show needs an Andy Richter who knows when to step back and let the actual guest speak. And I'm perfectly fine.
Many would disagree with that. Many want to hear you more than me.
And also, let's not pretend like Wei and I don't have a separate friendship outside of this.
Sorry.
Trifecta here.
Yeah, let's not assume me and Damien are friends.
Well, I know. One time you invited me over to your apartment, but then never again. I've invited you.
Why did I invite you to my apartment
to record a podcast?
What did we? Oh yeah, that's
John
right.
John doesn't invite me to his place.
I have so
besides to record podcasts anyway.
Oh, okay, well that's true.
Yeah, probably watch.
When have you ever invited me to your place?
We watched
the one time you invited me over just to hang out. The note was you can come over, but I don't have any beer. The subtext being, I could go for some beer right now. I don't want to buy some. Let's invite Pollock over. He can grab some along the way.
You're making all these terrible assumptions about me. That just makes me sound like a terrible
They're all true, though.
It is not true. There's nothing to do at my place. There's really nothing to do at my place.
What is there to do at anyone's place?
You got records on the wall of your place. That's fun.
It's true.
And I gave you a record for that one.
I don't have a record player, though, but I do have records.
Did the 7-inch I gave you make it on the wall?
Yes, it is on my wall.
Oh, amazing.
What'd you give him?
I gave him the Dallas.
Oh, yeah, still yeah, up, there. Yeah, up there.
That's awesome.
Yeah,
that's awesome. I'm happy to hear that. Because you know what? You could be lying, and I'll never be invited over to your house.
That is true.
Let's all go to John's house after this.
Let's definitely go to John's house.
Yeah.
And next Hot time, Box.
Yeah.
None of you are invited to my place anytime soon. Unless you're bringing beer over. The Wei caveat. Damien, did you have any interest in watching this show when I asked you to come in and chat Great American Bash 96?
Well, actually, John, the full story of my appearance on the show this time was like you making fun of me for name dropping on the Review and Impact reunion special.
Uh-huh.
And then I was like, actually, I would love to do this documentary so I could make my name drop kind of
That was
natural.
The impetus. Not because it would be something of value to our listeners. It was.
I would be.
Hey, I know this guy, and I can talk about how I know this guy.
Well, no, I wasn't.
What
like,
a vain.
I don't know
pick.
Him. I know stories about him that would be exciting and interesting for the listeners. Is what I was saying. And then we had a whole documentary picked out, and John's like, "This sounds like a great idea. I'll get back to you when I want to do it." And then text message last week, like, "Hey, do you want to do this show instead?" Boom. That's how it happened.
Well, sometimes you just got to get your foot in the door.
That's what I thought. I'm like, I'm not going to turn it down. You're like, hey, you can say no, and we can potentially get to your show one day. But I thought I had
Listen,
to come.
Listen, Wei is the here, one here. That preserves the art of getting the nitty-gritty reviews out. I want commercial blockbuster success.
Yep.
I want big shows that mass amounts are going to watch.
Which documentary do you want to do?
We're going to do the BBC Robbie Brookside documentary where they did I'm a Wrestler, I think it's called.
I would love to watch that.
It is
that
hilarious.
Sounds great.
In fairness, I was just docked out. To be
And again, like we said, it's tougher sometimes for people to find shows like that.
This one was easy. It was
on YouTube.
Really, so I didn't have that excuse.
We don't have that excuse.
It was easier for me to find that show than it was for me to try and find this show on the WWE Network.
Yeah, oh, come on.
Yeah. I know, honestly, I
do wait, not have on. The WWE
I have the
network?
WWE.
Then how can you not find
Because I have bought.
That's on you.
I have bought and canceled the WWE Network. Well, my wife, Lauren, has canceled the WWE Network on me 2 dozen times now.
2 dozen times?
Like,
you've just gone to log in?
We buy
Surprise,
it.
It's gone.
No, but I don't even – when I first signed up for it, there was no web component. You could only do the on thing. So I called Wei this morning. I'm like, yeah, I don't know. It's not on the on-demand on the TV thing.
You hadn't watched it as of this morning?
No. I watched it last night because it's also illegally streaming on a site. But I paid for the network and then found it also streaming. So I feel like I did pay for it.
So Asian, not a criminal.
So Damien didn't know that he had access to the online version. He was only relying on the Rogers
you
on-demand.
You didn't know all this time.
You
clearly don't listen to this show.
I do listen to this show, John, all the time.
He's a former listener.
Oh, did I not just come in and talk about the fact that you had a cold? And did I not text you midway to listening
to? That was a different show, though. That was the law.
I listen to every show.
Uh-huh.
Every show.
I don't care. Okay. Whether or not you listen to us. But
so, wait, so you know
now,
I do.
So now you know.
Yes.
Now you know you have access to
now I do.
Thousands and thousands of hours.
Yes.
I can't believe you only stumbled upon this.
Well, because like when here's the thing.
Everything's there.
In Canada you couldn't do it at first, right?
That was quickly rectified.
Then,
I would say within a month.
So the first one I signed up, I couldn't do it.
Uh-huh.
And then when I signed up again, I needed to do it but with an IP blocker. And then they stopped my IP blocker from working to get the access to the online.
That is right.
And then I've signed up subsequently, and I've just been like, oh, I'm just going to sign up. I'm going to watch NXT.
You're on Rogers?
Yeah.
Yeah. So you're my Rogers.
Yeah. I'm constantly signing up and canceling all the time.
Are you getting the free, like, oh, so you're not even getting a free membership. You're just like.
No, I just take it for the one. I'm like pretty much paying $10 to watch an NXT special or like, and then I'll be like, I'll keep it for another pay-per-view.
That's when you would order is whenever there's an NXT show.
NXT show or a pay-per-view I want to see. Right. Something you guys have been hyping up, talking about.
What else are you watching lately, wrestling-wise?
ROH still. That's my favorite. It's such an easy 1 hour of TV.
Do you watch it in standard definition on the Fox affiliate,
yeah,
or do you watch it in high definition on the Fight Network?
Actually, I did not. You know what? I'm going to resign.
You don't have the Fight Network.
I do not. I got to resign up.
Get out of here.
I know.
Get out of here.
Listen,
right
guys,
now.
I have a 6-month-old baby.
Oh.
I have,
which
like,
to
no,
me would be all the reason why.
You think I can watch anything?
You just sit down with the baby while it cries. Put on the Fight Network.
Yeah, you think if
it's podcasts and movies, that's your life.
I have a 7-year-old kid, John. Are you telling me that it's responsible parenting to let a 7-year-old kid watch the Fight Network?
Yes.
Look at this right now.
There's warnings.
He will do this shit to me.
This
the 7-year-old.
That's YouTube.
YouTube.
We wouldn't run Antonio Inoki, Billy Robinson here for 7-year-old. That's for the 10-year-olds.
That's for the 10-year-olds.
It's double digits. Do you know the lineup of wrestling we've added? Oh my God.
Yes.
Wait, tell us.
I can run it down because I listen to podcasts.
Two deals in the last 48 hours.
Yeah.
We've added.
You tell us.
British Weekly Wrestling, which is a weekly show. We have added
what is that show?
Insane Championship Wrestling.
It's based on New Generation?
New Generation Wrestling.
New Generation
out
wrestling.
Of the UK.
Okay.
We added ICW out of Scotland.
Oh, whoa.
Which is the documentary we reviewed a year ago, which I'm sure you heard.
Oh, yes. John,
what else?
Some people
John?
Got very upset that we didn't praise enough that documentary. It's a good documentary. I believe our critique was good, not great.
Yeah, but it also says nothing about the actual. It made the product and the wrestling look tremendous, and I'm definitely interested. We should actually review an ICW show.
Sure.
Coming up on the Fight Network. What else have we got?
We've got ROH. We've got TNA.
Mm-hmm. CMLL.
CMLL. AAA.
And what else?
Wow.
More to come.
There's a big one coming.
More to come.
There's a big one coming.
More to come.
That it's so big. I think Damien would even subscribe at that point.
I have subscribed. I have subscribed.
Oh,
to,
so you've canceled the Fight Network.
Well,
that's even worse.
No, my wife is my wife and I are constantly in a TV battle.
Man.
We're constantly in a TV battle between responsibility and Damien's entertainment value.
Oh,
and
right.
It is constantly like her trimming back on all the channels I add and me trying to add more channels. It is a cat and mouse game.
Well, I'd like to know what you're doing with your $279 a month. That's
resigning up to the Fight Network now to support my friends.
He would rather buy that Pepsi.
No, I wouldn't.
That support our livelihood.
I would have rather shown up here and my friend John Pollock offered me a tea, but I went downstairs and bought a Pepsi.
I was showing you over to the pop machine, but you were too good to even get. You won't give the Fight Network money regardless.
No, never.
I'd rather leave this building and go buy outside pop.
I asked you because my friend, Mr. Tim, Ease, I have to support them because I love their food so much because they make such great culinary stuff.
You know what? I went downstairs to buy this coffee, and the guy who sells it to me, I bought it. I've made my transaction. He said, you know you can get a strudel with that.
Did you go, or did you do the Bob Ray gag?
Like, I didn't understand what he was saying. He's like, next time,
you
for
idiot.
A dollar more, you can get a strudel with your coffee.
Just strudels? Not
this
any
was
other
his
donut?
Choice of side that he was offering.
You could get any donut.
I was going to say, I know I can buy any. I know there's no off menu here. I can order whatever I want here. I just want the damn coffee. I am aware of what else. I could also get a sandwich here. I could get a donut. I could get a hot chocolate. I could mix my hot chocolate and coffee. I'm aware of the options. So why do you have to... And he said, for a dollar more. It's not even a deal here. It's like, no shit, I could get a strudel with this.
I'd love to go to Tim Hortons and just to see you interact with the people down there. Because
I don't want to interact.
I never have such
that would be a good
dramatic
YouTube
interactions.
Show.
Oh.
John loves Tim.
Damien knows, unless there's a microphone here. I probably don't want to talk to him.
No, he will be very curt.
That's probably.
No, I'm just kidding.
You caught me at a bad time this morning when you called me.
I noticed.
I had to make it quick.
I noticed. John, I was like, yeah. I was busy. I'm sorry.
Monday mornings are
Monday
are
is the worst.
Weird.
I know.
Monday is the worst day.
Monday is your Dave Meltzer's Tuesday.
I guess so. I guess there's something to that.
I know better than to have long conversations with John on Mondays outside of doing these shows.
I try to keep it short too. I went to a 2-joke minimum. And then I was just like, okay, I'm out, John. Peace. See you soon.
Yeah, we had an awkward end where I said, pardon? I'll see you later. Oh, okay.
Yeah, I'm like, I'll see you later. I'm trying to get my word.
Very muffled. It was like you were talking in your beard or something.
Well, because I was charging my phone because it was down to like the end. And I was like trying to bend down at the same time as I was telling you what was up.
Speaking a different language to me.
A Monday morning, John, is definitely different from like a Friday, John. Definitely.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Something tells me when John – I've never been out with John in a social setting.
Yeah.
Other than like – no, because even when I go to those wrestling things, you're on work time when you're at those wrestling events. There are also ROH shows and stuff, right?
Mm,
you're like a little bit – but like I've never been with you when you've like partied.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You've never been out to the elf
night. No, I've never been to an elf night.
That's right.
Like when you're getting into strangers' electric cars and like going for rides. I've never seen that side of you.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a story totally that he's pulling different. Out there. He's winning us all. We should keep a tab. Pro Damian point, anti Damian point, and see if he's a fan at the end of this show.
Oh, listen to this guy over here.
Pro point.
Here I am going around working with
these
real
shows,
legitimate music
the
celebrities.
Of these shows
wait,
is
a second, so wait a second, John. When was the last time you watched one of Damian's episodes of Canadian Cannabis on Vice?
Oh, yeah. What do you think of Candyland, John?
I've listened to your podcast.
What do you think of Candyland?
I listened to Anthony Bourdain on your show.
Did you listen to the Robbie Brookside episode yet?
No.
Oh, my God.
How dare you.
I was, like, picturing your face as I'm recording this. I'm like, I finally might earn John's respect
I'm going to
five
listen to
goddamn
it. I legitimately
years.
Have interest in hearing that.
Oh, my God. I'm, like, talking to him these stories. I'm like, John's going to like me finally. Finally, John's
going to
like me.
In fairness, though. Okay, let's try and even this out. If I were to go to a punk show.
Yes.
You wouldn't come watch it, would you?
If you were to do a punk show?
Yeah.
Wait, if John performed in a punk band as a lead singer,
yeah, John,
of course I would.
Let me actually bring this on
for
the same level.
For non-mocking purposes,
let me actually
really
evil this analogy out.
Well, I would start a punk band,
John. Though, if you did do a show where you had, let's say, Bob Mould on to talk about punk and wrestling, you're goddamn right, I would listen. Be my first listen in the morning. Boom.
I wouldn't dare go into the punk realm.
I'd
be concerned about your critique.
Are these subtle shots?
Don't worry.
I kept the wrestling very subtle.
That's a compliment to you.
Good.
I said I'm not going to get out of my depth.
I got a couple other wrestling guests that I'm trying to land in the future.
Like who? Why don't you name them, and then in a few months we'll see how successful.
No, because then it's not going to happen, and then you're going to rub it in my face super hard next time
exactly.
I come on
who
in like 2 years.
For the people who don't even aren't even aware, who are the wrestling guests that you've had on your punk podcast?
I've had on actually like – as far as like wrestlers, I've had on MVP and Robbie Brookside.
And you just had them like on to talk strictly about punk music.
Talk about music.
Yeah.
And they like obviously
you'll get way more guests that way.
Yeah, well I think that's the thing is these guys I find it fascinating about wrestling and punk. We've talked about this on the show obviously before, so this is retread for some of you. But like I find it fascinating how intermingled they are and how interlinked because I've also had on like this guy Nikki from the band Nothing, who is like talking about going to ECW Arena. I had on almost every punk band that I've had on has some sort of wrestling tie-in.
Right. When are you going to have Sam Sutherland on your podcast?
I got to have Sam on soon. I've been talking to Sam about coming on and just didn't work out. You know what? Thank you for reminding me, John. I'm going to hit up Sam.
Sam is like huge on YouTube now.
Yeah,
isn't he?
This podcast is huge.
Does he still do? Do you ever see those pre rolls anymore? Where they did it was like 6 degrees of separation, where you take two artists and link them through these various events, and they ran them as like pre roll ads on videos. That's when I saw them. It was a great idea.
Oh, okay, he didn't want
where he would take something ridiculous. I'm just going to throw names like Barbara Streisand and Slipknot, and he would go through and connect them in some way.
There was a website that did that years ago where you could put in any artist and it would connect them actually through shared work projects. But it's amazing how there's like some, you know, like Bob Rock who, you know, like produces Metallica stuff, also did all like the DOA punk records back in the day, or, you know, Diplo used to, you know, go to punk shows back in Florida and now he's, you know, working with Justin Bieber and the like. Skrillex was even in a quote unquote punk band.
You recently went and, performed with Bob Mould, correct? Performed on his show.
At his show, on the stage with him at his
performance. Now, my understanding is the reaction from the punk community to your performance, been very much akin to Will Ospreay and Ricochet.
Yes.
In professional wrestling over the last week.
I would say that works definitely as an analogy.
Some people thought you changed the industry.
The older
Others thought you were killing the industry.
The older people did not really respect the fact that
Who
I
was the
up.
Vader of
yeah,
the
what
punk
happened?
Scene.
Tell me. I
would say Chris Murphy is right up there as the Vader of the punk scene.
So
Bob Mould from Husker Du, and also to bring it back to wrestling, WCW writing fame, played a show in Toronto, and they hit me up and like, do you want to come down? I'm a big fan, obviously, of Husker Du and Sugar and all of Bob Mould stuff. And they were like, do you want to come down and do a song with us? And I'm like, sure, what song? They're like, Divide and Conquer, which has like a billion lyrics. But I studied, wrote them down all on my arm.
Oh, the Stephanie McMahon.
Did not need to, or The Rock. Remember The Rock did it? Right. I didn't even
How much notice did you get?
Like... 24 hours. 24
oh,
hours.
Wow. Still, that's like a cram session.
I love the song, so I knew the song, but it's like when you actually are like, okay, what are every word of this line? That's when it gets difficult. So, I went down, did it, had a great time, but then people like Chris Murphy and all these people who weren't even there.
I thought he was your friend.
He's one of my buddies.
Okay, and?
So he
jealousy,
didn't even see...
Jealousy comes in all forms.
What did he say? What, did you mess up or something?
No. Nope. He's like, I'm glad
just
you...
Just the idea of it.
Just the idea that I did it, and he didn't do it.
Oh.
Too much for some
comedian
rock stars to take.
How could you possibly review this without seeing the... It would be like way describing a match on Raw to me. No, that sucked. How could you possibly do that?
You could do
Is
that.
There any way he saw this? Or this was just word of mouth from others that were there?
No. And also, to be fair, I've since talked to Chris, and he did tell me he was joking. But truth in jest, I say, John. Truth in jest.
Wow.
But why we're not here to talk about me and Bob Mould. We're here to talk about you, John Pollock, Bob Mould.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh,
after the show, I went back because Bob.
He said, Damien, you performed well, but next time I'm going to invite John Pollock to divide and conquer.
Yeah, you know DJ Jopo, don't you?
Yes. You know DJ Jopo.
So I'm going to be on his stealth.
The tips will be frosted again. And the stage will be taken.
Wait, what do you mean? What do you mean, John Pollock and Bob Mould? What are you talking about?
Well, after the show, I went back to talk to Bob about wrestling because that's his thing.
Yep.
He doesn't care that much about.
Yep.
It's like the opposite of what you were saying about wrestlers.
Yes, get them out of their element.
Exactly. So we're talking about New Japan and we're talking about like Lucha Underground and ROH and stuff. And then I bring up John Pollock and he's like, "Oh no, I know John Pollock. I listen to the show."
Whoa.
Boom, right there. Real recognizes real.
Wow. That was three Damien points, actually.
Real recognizes real, John.
Shout out to Bob Mould.
You're happy about that name drop, I bet.
Name drops, I have nothing against name drops in general. I think that name drops tend to lead to the best stories.
That's true. Me too.
But you are anti-name dropping, which is funny.
No, I'm not.
Criticize
I'm
you
not,
about.
Andy. I'm no one.
You flat out texted me.
Because you bring it up to me all the time. And I'm like, because you're always like, oh, another name drop, Damien. Another name drop. But I noticed that there's a discrepancy in who gets called and who doesn't get called name drop. Court Bauer never gets called on a name drop. Damien Abraham, except one time he did. And so I texted John immediately. You just called Court on a name drop.
I really don't have issues with name dropping. Especially if you're following up with a relevant story.
Yeah.
I mean, how else are you – what else are you supposed to say? Are you supposed to hide the fact that you know this person?
Well, like it's like when you guys talk about Robin Black, to someone that's a name drop to you, it's a coworker.
Yeah.
You know?
Sure.
Well, if you don't, you're not giving credit.
Yep. Yep. And then who's the biggest asshole?
Hmm.
My friend told me recently – He has on his Instagram. I'm not going to say his name.
Then that defeats the purpose of this conversation.
I tell you.
Yeah.
But anyway, he posted a picture of a fan's tattoo based on his band's record. And the tattoo artist wrote a huge comment about how he was pretending to take credit for the tattoo artist's work by posting the picture. He's like, a fan sent me this photo.
I have no idea who you're talking about here. So the story is not as interesting.
Then we move on.
See, when name you do drop. That, you're taking the listener and putting them down this path of guessing who it is.
I know.
And we're not even listening to you at this
I know.
Point. We're thinking, who could he be talking about?
I know. Justin Bieber is a hell of a guy to try and protect.
Yeah. I think Justin Bieber at some point
is
going to do a show with us.
What?
Well, I've been working hard. Hey. I've got some people that I've lined up like the creme de la creme of guests that want to come on because you guys have some music fans, like legit music, legendary fans.
Oh, boy. Like who?
So now it's I've talked about it before. Scott Kelly listens. He's listening right now. Mm-hmm. What up, Scott? Like, I was telling
Gabe Sapolsky?
Gabe,
big
Gabe
punk
listens.
Fan. We learned
he doesn't listen to us, though.
He does listen. I don't think he listens to every show.
Well, the last time we had you on. That was the best. Gabe tweets out. It was I'm paraphrasing. It was so great to finally be on a show with Damian Abraham. And that was it. I recall three people being a part of that interview and one guy asking 90% of the questions.
But in defense, I didn't make the list. Had you been on a show with him before? Yeah, you'd interviewed him before. So he's been on shows with you before.
We met Gabe before.
Yeah. He and I had never.
Gabe wouldn't spot me out of a lineup.
I bet you he would.
Maybe.
I bet you he would.
Gabe. Well, maybe he's listening to this one because we're going to tag you in this.
So maybe he's going to listen.
He might spot your voice, though.
I'm going to retweet and tag him in the retweet.
No.
Yeah. And then you should send this out saying, "It was such a blast to be on with Wei Ting."
All right, we should.
It was such a blast to be on Review Away talking about Gabe Sapolsky.
All right, we're right at the point where
before we go on to talk about this stupid wrestling show, we got to talk about one thing.
Okay.
We got to make this super meta. We got to talk about the wrestling review show Talking Sheets.
Oh my.
We just broke a fourth wall.
Wow. Are we allowed to do that?
That's another show.
But they review you guys on that show.
What have they said?
They love you guys. They think you guys are one of the best wrestling review shows out there.
I'm glad that reviews of wrestling reviews are out there now. I think there's a ton of interest in that.
I listen. I'm not going to say someone else in this room that listens, but I know there's someone else in this room that may have listened before.
Oh, Wei's talked about.
Yeah, definitely. Haven't we talked about it?
Not on the show. Not that I cannot recall. Hopefully someone can fact check me on this because
I probably haven't listened to all of our shows.
I've listened to every show.
Wow.
Every show. Including that one. Remember that time I came here and I got you guys to fix the archive? The first time you fixed the archive? Because I took it all on tour.
Broken again.
Oh, God. Well, I've listened to them all. I don't care anyone.
Yeah. You know. We got to get on that.
Yeah. I think it's cool. The guy who's in charge of it, Les Moore, he used to write articles on the site.
He must be a writer, or like a TV writer. Yeah, just as his,
but he wrote really well. He wrote like almost like Onion-like articles about Dave Meltzer or whoever. But you could tell that they were done kind of humorous with a sense of humor attached to it. But he did them so seriously, and I love that it exists. I mean, I love the fact that even wrestling has gotten to the point now where the people covering wrestling have people covering them.
Oh, absolutely. Well, we live in a world now where you can have your celebrity. You can zoom in on whatever your celebrity culture, quote unquote celebrity culture, obviously not.
When will they start getting reviewed?
Right now. Boom. Look what we're doing.
Oh, boy.
We just put an echo chamber together. This is like a infinity loop.
How far down the rabbit hole will it go? Like the reviewers of the review show get reviewed. you're going to go through multiple different versions.
Well, here's what I'm thinking, John. Maybe they're going to review this episode and talk about us talking about them, and then you guys can have me back on to talk about that.
We should have, to make this full circle, we should have brought up the Observer from June of 96 and look at Dave Meltzer's review of the Great American Bash as we review one and then the coverage of the event.
I'm just confused.
Exactly. That's the point.
But, back to this show. You know what is interesting about this show?
What do you mean back to this show? We're starting at this show. We haven't got to the show yet, Damien. It's been a half hour. And
this is like old school.
This is why we want to start earlier.
This is like Undertaker walking along the top rope. This is our old school. This is when I used to come in and filibuster for the first 2 hours?
We don't have the luxury anymore. We got actual jobs.
We're all grown up.
Yeah, we were unemployed then.
We
basically had nothing to do back then.
Those were the good old days.
Yeah.
I was a VJ. They're over.
What was your first review you did with us?
God, no. The first time I ever talked to you was about the CM Punk pipe bomb.
I know that.
First
then we
review. No, I didn't.
I know it was at our old studio.
I did an interview first.
Oh, yeah.
I just came
in. Wow, you were interview worthy.
Yeah. Well,
that's a big deal.
Well, I was I remember on the day on that street, you guys were pretty shocked that I stopped you and was like, "Can I talk to you guys?" You're like, "Sure. Have you heard of the CM Punk pipe bomb?" And I'm like, "Here are my talking points." And you're like, who are you? And then I told you who I was. And then Wei's like, I had heard
of your group, but meeting you, I instantly went back to the video you did with Taylor Wilde. I was like, that's a guy from the Taylor Wilde video who took bumps.
I know. That was before I met you guys, too.
It was definitely
before. Wow, that's crazy, yeah.
That was my connection to Damian Abraham.
Yeah. That's crazy. I don't know. I'm trying to remember the first show I reviewed with you. Must have been FMW or it must have been something really bad. Because that was my thing for a while, was picking the worst possible shows for you guys to review. I think I did FMW because Dan Labransky did the intro, and we wanted to talk about that, too.
I remember enjoying that show.
Oh, no, we love that show. But I mean, like, when I say, I mean, as far as, like, ultra-violent wrestling.
Right, right.
Even though I'm not a huge fan of that stuff.
Did you know where, do you know that we have archives, Way?
Yes, I did.
Where can people go to find archives?
Lawradio.proboards.com.
I hear they're broken, though.
Not all of them.
Some of them are.
80% of them are all good.
Take your chances.
You know, we have to remind people of things that exist. This past Monday, when we announced we were giving out those Niagara Falls Comic-Con tickets on Review of Raw, I was asked, what time does Review of Raw air and what station can I listen to it on? And my instant go-to is to respond with something sarcastic, but I've got to remember you're trying to grow.
Well,
I'm a dick, Way. You should manage our Twitter account.
It's
hard. I think it would be much more friendly and much more organic coming from you than me.
It's a lot. There's so many more venues for people to get their information these days now. Just even excuse me. Okay.
Snapchat. We should be face swapping this right now.
Yeah. But, I mean, it was probably a lot easier back, 30 years ago when you could just tell people, hey, tune in on the station at this time. Now you can get our show on TV, on YouTube, on iTunes, Stitcher, whatever. It's not.
I was tempted to give this guy to just make up a station and a time.
Yeah, sure.
See if you would have gone out of his way to find it. Listen to the whole show. Never heard the giveaway. Okay, we got to get into this show because there's no way we're going to get into this and finish.
We'll talk about my wrestling music column at the end of the show.
Yes, we will get in. Don't worry, you'll get something out of this, Damien.
You'll get my
for putting up with us.
No, I'm honestly. I call you guys to talk. You get me off the phone right away. Way, I can keep on the phone for like 20, 30 minutes.
Well, Way's bad at that, though.
Private podcast. That's the next thing. Private podcasts.
That's not private.
Like a person pays you
money
and you just do little podcasts with them.
No. I forget it.
Yeah.
Let's get into
Rick
from
Toronto. It sounds a little like phone sex.
It's phone Periscope. That's what you're describing.
Yeah,
and I hate that. Is Periscope gone at this point? Because I think it's largely lost its momentum.
I've never used it.
I've never used it, but I think it's still there. People still tell you Periscope. But could you imagine Rick from Toronto calling you and paying for a private podcast?
I think Rick from Toronto's done. That's my call, actually. I've got many complaints about Rick from Toronto. Well, I wasn't there Sunday night.
Oh, so you don't want him on the show anymore? You're banning him? I think he's great.
I think I want to see where it develops.
Okay, I want feedback somewhere from people because I don't know if he adds anything.
Have you met him in real life?
Nope.
I always thought he was Mouth's friend or something.
I just feel the gimmicks kind of played itself out.
Yeah.
It's getting a little more conspiracy theory.
It's just like, okay, you come on, you yell, you don't make any sense, and then you hang up.
I like how Jason's playing with different interaction techniques. Like you can see each week, he's like, "I'm going to try something different this time."
I like the rapport he has with Jay.
No. What was the guy?
I'll let the people decide.
All right.
Because I've gotten many complaints about him more than any other call.
People complain about Roman Reigns. They still watch. So what?
You know he draws. Rick from Toronto. I don't know if anyone's tuning in for Rick.
You know who kind of had Miz heat for a minute, but I wish he was back now. John of Arc. John from Arkansas, remember that guy?
Yeah.
What happened to him?
I don't know. One time I listened to another random radio podcast because like you guys didn't have an episode of it. I'm like, oh, I'm just going to download this show.
How dare you?
And he called in to another show. And I was like, whoa. It's like when you're reading a comic book and when you're reading the DC comic books and all of a sudden the Watchmen show up or something.
Wow.
How's that for bringing it back to when you guys used to talk about comic books?
The Great American Bash took place on Sunday, June the 16th from Baltimore, Maryland. In front of a crowd of 9,000 people and a gate of $123,406.
It looked way more crowded than that.
Well,
it did look pretty full.
This was like a third of what the UFC drew on Sunday night in Las Vegas for a free TV card. So, man, times have changed. It started off with a pre-tape promo. First of all, did you watch the Nitros leading into this, Mr. Abraham? Did you listen to our show last week of our review?
Hey, the guy has three kids.
I don't care if you watch them or not. I'm just saying
that. You're goddamn right. I sat on the toilet, smoked some weed after the kids went to bed, and listened to a review away reviewing the first appearance of one Scott Hall and the first appearance of one Kevin.
It would have been great if you got arrested over the past week and could have added that.
That would have been terrible if I got arrested, John.
For the purposes of this show, it would have been great.
It would have been good, I guess.
Local celebrity gets arrested, first speaks out on wrestling podcast about experience.
I think my first would be...
Because there was no name attached to these dispensaries. I mean, if someone notable got busted in all of this, it would have been a bigger story than it was.
Yeah. Yeah, I think the thing that was most notable, you could tell, is that the police did the press conference and they put out the candy. And then someone called them because they apparently had
candy.
They put out all the weed candy during the press conference for all the bus.
How did they know it was weed candy?
Well, that's the thing. Then they also apparently padded it with real candy from a store.
They gave out candy at this press conference?
No, they put on the like what they seized on display. Like, here's what we've got. Like, all the sinister stuff. And instead of putting the weed or the shatter or the hash, which there was tons of, I'm sure, they put out the candy.
Yeah.
So it looked like a police officer in Candyland. Doing a speech about how dangerous everything is.
What a waste of time.
Willy Wonka.
Willy Wonka. Anyway.
Okay. That was my fault for going down that path.
You opened it up, John. I was like, weed? Okay, I'm diving in.
We should add, John has to record Fight News Now in about an hour and 10.
So there's no way we're finishing this podcast.
I don't know how we're going to go through this show in that time.
We're probably going to have to pick up and finish this after. It starts off with a pre-tape promo from Bobby Heenan, who is acting paranoid and scared. Randy Savage cutting a promo wearing his time-sensitive Fall Brawl War Games t-shirt, along with Steve McMichael and Kevin Green. And we got promos from Flair and Anderson, Luger, and the Giant telling Lex Luger not to look up the word giant in the dictionary because he's going to find out the description firsthand. There's a very loud yell going on in the background.
There's a giant in the background.
Yeah. And then we go to this crowd, which featured this fan in the front row wearing his finest Father's Day attire, a tuxedo t-shirt. Yeah.
And they showed him a couple times.
Many a time he was showing. And this fan was very excited for the Great American Bash with the worst design of a t-shirt in modern history, the tuxedo t-shirt.
The whole show feels like this is the end of an era, and that like you kind of get a hint.
Really?
Of
this felt like the beginning of an era.
Well, that's what I mean. Like, you get a hint of the new era when you have the Outsiders.
I'm kind of with Damien. It felt like the transition.
Yeah, it felt like almost felt like, because you know what's coming, this one feels like so weird. Like, it just feels like all these angles, like, oh, none of this stuff matters in a couple months. Mm.
Yeah, but I think even if you watch this just with... If you were watching this in June of 96, this felt like a company that was ready to explode. There was a lot of great stuff on this show, big angles they were shooting, and you certainly felt that momentum at this point, I feel, watching this show.
You know what's really bizarre? Because I wanted to make sure I was getting the whole show, so I went to the Wikipedia to kind of see the rundown of matches. They don't at all mention the Outsiders on the Wikipedia entry for the show.
Well, because they didn't have names at this point. They weren't even identified as Scott Hall or Kevin Nash at this point.
But like, they don't even say, like, two guys came in. Like, they don't even make – you know, they talk about all the other stuff that happened in the show, but they don't even make reference to this at all.
I suppose in the grand scheme of things, it wasn't really that important. I mean, what did they come out and really
say?
What, that angle?
Yeah.
Well, I thought that was a pretty big angle on this show.
I kind of think that's that would be the thing you left this show thinking about to me.
Yeah.
I agree. And we get to this main event, and I guess we can talk about it at the main event. But it almost feels like that just feels so – like you were at that show. It must have been like, ooh, the air's all out of this balloon now. Like, what are we going to do? Like, that was what we wanted to see.
We also had the Randy Savage and Sting lookalikes in the crowd. Mm-hmm. This Randy Savage dude was incredible.
Spot on.
The Sting fan, they closed in on him. And he started yelling out Sting's name as if we didn't put the pieces together of what his attempt to look alike was. And then the U.S. anthem played with Sergeant Craig Pittman coming out to hold the U.S. flag. What an interesting integration here with the Sergeant Craig Pittman coming out for the anthem. And then our announcers, Tony Schiavone, and I forgot about this. We were going to get 3 hours of Dusty Rhodes at the Great American Bash.
Dusty Rhodes. This was because Heenan was in the
main event. Heenan was involved here, and Dusty typically would come in for pay-per-views. I think he was doing Saturday night at this time.
Oh, okay.
If I'm
so they
correct.
Got him to do the pay-per-views, like he was a special attraction.
Well, they would mix up the announcers because Bischoff never did pay-per-views. It was always Schiavone that was on the pay-per-views, and Dusty Rhodes with his red leather jacket, and they mentioned the passing of Dick Murdoch, and then just quickly moved on to the show. And Dusty's number of mentions of the term electricity were...
Do you know who was booking at the time?
At this time, it was... You had Kevin Sullivan as the main booker at this point in time at WCW. Fire and Ice took on the Steiner Brothers to start the show.
Oh, do you see the undercard, by the way? There's three dark matches that didn't air.
Oh.
And it's like, it's they're all like, one's 1 minute.
Are we going to talk about the dark
2 minutes?
Matches?
No, we don't have to talk about the matches, but I'm just saying, one's one minute. They're all super quick. One's 2 minutes and one's 3 minutes. Like, why didn't you just put on one 8 minute match?
Well, that was for. I guess
you want to see people.
Yeah, I guess
you want everybody to get on the card.
Yeah, that's true.
It was for entrances and pops. But
I'm glad Rollerball, Rocco Rock, and Grunge got on there.
That's true.
1 minute match.
Fire and Ice took on the Steiner Brothers, and Norton comes in missing a splash in the corner, but then clotheslines Rick. And Dusty compares this to running into Scott Norton by asking, "Did you ever run into a wall as a kid, or fall on cement?" I'm just imagining a child. Has your child ever ran into a wall? Sprinted into a wall?
No, but I think I definitely have, so I can relate to it, I think, more than my kid can. Yeah.
I once ran into a washroom door that was locked, thinking it would open, and I ended up needing stitches as a result of that. So that would be the closest to a wall.
Those are often the worst injuries. It's not, you know, doing something, a dangerous sport. It's walking into a door.
I went in like face first. Did color.
I knew, as a kid, I knew another kid that ran through a plate glass window.
Oh, God. Through?
Like, through it. Got cut up.
Maybe you would bounce off. Is this a child? Or
like a little kid, like 7 years old.
Oh, I remember a guy in my elementary school.
Steve Austin.
Like Steve Austin, yeah. Or Goldberg, too, right? Punched the car window.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, after insisting that it be legit glass and not.
Well, this kid.
Awful.
This kid
almost lost an arm as a result.
This kid's Goldberg tough.
Or something else. Rick hit a belly-to-belly onto Norton, and then Fire and Ice got the advantage on Scott. They came back. This was a match of the Steiners throwing around these two large men all over the ring. And Dusty attempted to pronounce the term equilibrium to less than optimal success.
Sometimes you get a shocker, like a stinger. You know, you ever get hit on the elbow, Tony?
No, never have.
You've never been hit on the elbow? Hold that thing up here. Let me knock
that.
Wait
a second here.
Well, anyway, it stings you down there, and you lose your equilibrium for a little while on it, but then it comes back. And that's what happened with Scott.
There was a shoulder breaker to Scott. He went for an arm bar, and Rick stomped Norton to break it up. And then there was a blind tag as Norton hit another shoulder breaker. Rick hits a German suplex to Norton. And then Norton takes a power bomb. Scott comes in, crotches Ice Train. Rick hits a bulldog to Norton off the shoulders of Scott. All four are in the ring fighting. And it ends with Scott hitting the Frankensteiner to pin Scott Norton at 10 minutes and 30 seconds. Given the fact that half this match consisted of Scott Norton and Ice Train, way above what I think most would expect going into this. This was just, throwing around two large guys. That was this match.
Yeah. And is Scott Norton smaller than he was in Japan? Do he look slightly smaller, or is it just me?
Maybe he was just in there with smaller guys in Japan.
Yeah, that's probably true.
I mean, I definitely a slower match, but I thought a good pace for sure by heavyweight standards. The Frankensteiner at the end looked kind of awful. Scott Steiner basically, it looked like he powerbombed himself when going for it. And at this time, I mean, he definitely got bigger later on, but he was already huge here.
Yeah.
But, he was still moving very well, I would say. And I think both Steiners looked really good here.
It's funny because in WWE, big guys don't take bumps like they do on this show. Like even later on, the John Tenta Big Bubba match. Like there's like guys going off the rope to the floor, and you don't like the big men don't like take those kind of bumps. It seems like they used to.
I don't know if that was the prototype match of the of 96, but we'll get to that. Gene Okerlund is backstage with Jimmy Hart, who he calls a Nathan Lane wannabe.
Yeah, there's a lot of homophobic, kind of weird stuff coming out of Mean Gene.
That to me wasn't even on the scale of what would happen later on in the show.
That's a taste.
He is also with Kevin Sullivan. Okerlund says that Benoit is very angry. And Sullivan says that he got rid of Brian Pillman. This was the first of many knocks towards Brian Pillman, who had left the company by this point, and proved he was a quitter. And Benoit is not a quitter. Sullivan stared off camera throughout this promo and says he is going to do something to Chris Benoit. He is going to lay a left hand on Chris Benoit, just like he did to Brian Pillman.
All right.
The left hand is coming. as the Taskmaster points out. United States Championship match, Damian's buddy Conan defending the United States title against El Gato, Pat Tanaka, who was billed from South America. Not a man from South America.
He was wearing a – it was basically Pat Tanaka wearing a tiger mask.
Yeah, it was a tiger mask.
Yes. South American tiger.
El Gato, the cat.
Conan brings his AAA heavyweight championship to the ring as well. And Dusty corrects Tony Schiavone on the feather in his hat analogy.
Here's a great one. Conan and El Gato in this title matchup for the United States Heavyweight Championship. It would be quite a feather in the cap of El Gato.
I guess.
I know a cat doesn't have feathers, but nevertheless, it would be quite a... It's Randy Eller showing us the U.S. Heavyweight title belt. Quite a feather for him to win that U.S.
Spit
heavyweight
it out.
Title.
Spit it out. What? Feather in the hat if he wins the title. That's all you had to say. A feather in the hat if you win the title. That's all. That's all. Not to filibuster.
The full-arm dragon twist.
And they spent way too much time qualifying this analogy. Dusty also gives extra description of the offensive strategy to those out there listening to this on the radio, which I think might have been zero, because I don't believe there was any radio coverage of the Great American Bash 1996. If I am incorrect, please let me know.
But at one point, didn't
WWF had WWF radio at the time on the Armed Forces Network. So, I mean, radio broadcast did exist prior to this in 96, but
listening to a wrestling match on radio, it's something I've never tried.
That's where it comes from, right? Like
that know. Can maybe that'll make a comeback.
Maybe we'll review one.
Yeah, we'll do play-by-play.
Yeah.
Riff Tracks.
Mm-hmm.
That's what Riff Tracks are, right?
I guess. Conan here was the U.S. and Mexican heavyweight champion. What was that, the Mexican title?
AAA heavyweight title. we had Conan deliver a thrust kick, and Dusty asked, El Gato means cat, right? Well, that was as quick as a cat. There was a sit-out powerbomb by El Gato for a two count and then into a head scissors. Conan got sent to the floor and hit a sunset flip powerbomb to the floor, which did get a reaction. The crowd started chanting for Conan, and then Conan came out of the corner with an Alabama slam into a jackknife cover and pinned the great El Gato in 6 minutes and 3 seconds.
All these guys needed their update. Like, even Scott Steiner in the last match, like, they all needed that kind of, like, repackaging they were about to have. Like, even Conan's attitude versus, like, the gear he had on was just, like...
Definitely. This was kind of like the pre-Attitude Era, you know, versions of all these wrestlers.
But it's almost like they're bursting out of these old gimmicks, waiting for their new ones.
Sure, it was before Sting, you know, turned into the Crow.
Before El Gato became... No, he didn't get that overall.
Before he gave Tiger Mask back his mask.
He could have become, I don't know, El Gator. He could have been an alligator.
An alligator.
Life. Wow. Okerlund is with Sting backstage.
You're trying to stir it up a little bit, aren't you, Mean Gene? You don't have to stir the Stinger up. When you say he's a little prissy, to be honest with you, I got to wonder myself, because he's talking about the Stinger painting up nice and pretty. Well, your lordship... You also drink tea like this, don't you? That little pinky out like that. I gotta wonder about you myself. Is that the way they breed the boys over there in England? Let me just square something up with you right now. That ain't the way we breed American men here in the United States. And that's exactly where you are on U.S. turf, U.S. soil. You can take... God, I can't say that. I just can't say that. Mean Gene, we're on TV. You take it for 1 second.
Well, I'd just like to point out one thing. This man has wrestled, actually, as a youngster in the sand pits of India. We know what he's done here at World Championship Wrestling. I think you got your work cut out for you, quite honestly.
I'm not taking anything away from him. I'm not saying he's not a fantastic wrestler. I'm just saying he's a little iffy. I'm not too sure about him. And if there's anybody that can straighten you out in the course of 10, 20, maybe 30 minutes, it's a Stinger, I guarantee you.
Maybe I was a little too strong when I said he's kind of a prissy. Well, whatever.
Damien, I want your analysis of this. He refers to Regal as prissy.
Well, I think, does Mean Gene start it? That's what it felt like. Like, Mean Gene's like, oh, you know, throws him. I think
that was Okerlund's setup, I believe.
Yeah, and then just Sting just is like, okay, here I'm going to go.
So Sting starts off with just the nationalistic stereotype of those from England drinking tea with a pinky. All right. And then wonders if that's how they breed the boys in England. And it's not how they breed American men here. And he basically has to stop himself before he says anything more offensive. But then, in his head, he heard more offensive. And went on to say that Regal is a little iffy. And if there's anyone that can straighten you out, it's the Stinger. So it's the American-made Sting versus homosexuals coming up. He is fighting the good fight of our straight Americans against those homosexuals from overseas that are coming to infiltrate WCW.
Sting.
Sting. The man called Sting.
Well, how long did he have the brown hair?
That was a 96 deal. And then he still had the brown hair at the beginning of the Crow gimmick.
Yeah, yeah.
And then it would go to the black. The but black, it was primarily yeah. in 96. But as they said during the commentary, a big topic of conversation in and out of the ring about Sting's brunette look at this time, which really didn't fit the Sting character. He was still the surfer version, but no one thinks of the brown hair with the part in the middle.
No. It looked really weird.
Yeah. I thought his delivery here, it's been a while since I've heard a Surfer Sting promo, but at least in 96, his delivery here sounded not all that different from what ultimately became his Joker Sting promos. It was just kind of loud, a little bit obnoxious, and a little wild.
I don't know if Surfer Sting would have tolerated nude beaches. So, I think.
Yeah, as long as
we
was,
clearly as saw the line that, man, that the Stinger woman. Was not willing to accept.
Yeah, we definitely know.
Anyway.
Doesn't like the tea drinkers.
1996. Diamond Dallas Page took on Marcus Alexander Bagwell next. Page came out and referred to the Baltimore Bimbos and then cut a promo on Carl Ripken. DDP then attacks from behind to start the match. And
second best theme, though, by the way.
This Page?
No, theme? American Males.
Oh, the American Males.
And theme. I love the Page theme, too, but the American Males is after Evolution, my second favorite theme.
Oh, boy. Do you know the lyrics
yeah, how's
to the
it
American Males theme?
Or the American Male. Or the American...
Is that it?
Yeah, I think so.
That's pretty good.
Hey, but what about Mongo and Kevin
oh,
Green's
Oh, boy.
Theme?
That was an awesome theme.
Yeah.
Or even Conan's theme. Like, it's so, because I forget, like, oh yeah, Conan didn't always rap his own themes.
I didn't pay attention.
It was like
to
this really bizarre instrumental.
Bagwell snapmares him over the top to the floor. Shivani explains how broke DDP was. And this is the storyline. He was broke, then met a tech student who became his benefactor and hooked him up with a lawyer in order to get him reinstated in WCW and got him into the Battle Bowl the month prior at Slamboree, and he won the Battle Bowl ring.
So it's kind of like a precursor to the Macho Man storyline they have going on at the same time.
Minus a benefactor minus that a benefactor. He met at university who set him up with a lawyer.
A little ahead of the curve, too, for the Silicon Valley benefactor.
Yeah, there you have it, the tech giant, DDP. Yeah. Bagwell was in control, dropkick Page from the ropes to the floor, followed with a pescado. Bagwell got crotched on the top, and Dusty tells the people at home to go crotch yourselves on a real clothesline outside at home and straddle it to find out how that feels. More detail than Dusty needed to provide to convey the pain that Bagwell was going through at the time.
And not really the same gauge.
No, not at all. I don't think the straddle was going to really emphasize anything more than just simply crotching yourself.
It's like really dangerous to tell kids to try that at home, actually.
Yeah, the clothesline would give away outside. Yeah. I mean, if a full body came down on it. Page applied an abdominal stretch, used the ropes, and Randy Anderson caught him. Page is trying to kick him at the ribs and then takes a back bump after missing. And then we got this awful inverted atomic drop by Bagwell that made very little contact. They go ahead and redo it. And then Bagwell uses a slingshot clothesline for a two count. Bagwell hits a tilt-a-whirl head scissors, and then Page blocks a suplex by holding onto the rope, diamond cutter, and pins Bagwell. 9 minutes, 39 seconds, and right before Page gets on top of him, Dusty guarantees that the babyface, Bagwell, will not kick out of this. And he didn't.
I didn't think the match was all that great. I thought it was a little sloppy and a little too long, considering just how basic the style was. I think DDP was clearly the more talented one here.
Though if you were watching this and you were to tell me DDP was going to break out like he would over the next 18 months, I never would have seen
it. Both guys broke out, though. Like, you know, Bagwell, like, obviously not as much, anywhere near as much, but he was, like, the head of the NWO at the worst time of the NWO, but he was the head of the...
He always had a great look, and I think when you turn that kind of, like, pretty boy look into a heel, I think it definitely worked. Yeah,
like, I was going to say, like, imagine picture two guys on WWE kind of in equal card placement to this, and, like, imagine, like, in a couple months, or, like, years in some cases, that they're both going to be elevated to kind of, like... mid-main card kind of roles.
Bagwell, especially in the early 90s, before the American Males even, I mean, very good tag team with Scorpio, then had the team with the Patriot, and he was someone that was progressing along really, really well. The neck injury certainly affected him, and they really blew that comeback with Bagwell by just going back to the heel role. But certainly, Bagwell was emerging at this time.
And the four-non-blondes hat.
Oh, yes.
That giant. That doesn't help anyone.
Next up, we had Gene Okerlund with the Giant and Jimmy Hart in their locker room. And Jimmy Hart was all over this show as the man with the Dungeon of Doom members.
It felt like he was in every match, like almost too much.
A lot, a lot. Hart was in the middle, and he talks about how this guy's got connections with the Giant and Luger. And he just laughs this off, saying Luger is sadly mistaken if he thinks he can put the Giant into the torture rack. And he lists the Giant's wins over Hogan, Savage, and Sting, and says Luger should have lifted some more weights before stepping into the ring with the Giant. Luger just not strong enough for the world champion.
They were teasing that Jimmy Hart might have been working with Lex Luger. Teasing like a Lex Luger heel turn. Is that right?
Well, that had been... I mean, Luger had come back to WCW, and... he was Sting's friend. So he was a babyface because he was aligned with Sting, but at the same time, joined the Dungeon of Doom, and it was like he was a heel apart from Sting, and the audience was constantly like, where is this guy's allegiance? Because Sting endorses this guy. They're the tag champions. They're friends. We love Sting, and therefore, Luger's his friend. But then Luger was part of the Dungeon of Doom, and he did all these heel actions. So it was actually decent at the time with Luger. But at this point, getting him ready for the Giant, they were trying to heat him up as your big baby face going into this pay-per-view. So it sounds a little confusing in the description. But I thought it worked for Luger at the time.
I guess you need Jimmy Hart because neither guy's really a great promo. So you need someone that's going to be the...
Yeah, the Giant was hardly great, but...
I thought he sounded pretty good, though, for somebody so new. You know what I mean? Especially...
Less was more, I think, with him. You don't need him talking all that often. Dean Malenko and Rey Mysterio Jr. was next for the Cruiserweight title. Rey Mysterio's debut in WCW. And this was the match where... the story's been told many times, where he was essentially laughed at in the locker room when he showed up. They thought this was some little child that was showing up and then came out and had this match with Dean Malenko. And smart on their part to have Mike Tenay right from the get-go be the third voice in the booth, which became consistent with the Cruiserweight division, because I could not have imagined Dusty Rhodes being leaned on to call this match. And to Dusty's credit, he put over Ray and he put over Malenko very strong. They weren't just trying to crack jokes about the size or anything like that. I thought Dusty was fine here, but Tenay was essential in this, and they had put a lot of stock in Rey Mysterio. He was not coming in to fail. They wanted him to be a real big cornerstone of this Cruiserweight division.
Yeah, Mike Tenay was like the only guy calling the moves at points.
He's
like,
good.
He's the only guy who probably knew.
I know, but that's the thing. It's like you kind of wish he was there for that Conan match earlier, because like, you know, there were a couple times where you kind of needed that guy.
He was a huge contrast, I thought, to the style of the other two. He was taking everything seriously, whereas the other two had a more of a loose joking style. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying you need the entire show to be like serious. I don't think I'd like that either. But I think that the combination of Tenay with the other two helped.
This was also the introduction. I mean, you can't go in assuming that these are AAA fans that are watching this, or anyone that maybe at most you had read about this guy. This was an introduction, and you needed to emphasized why this talent is so special and we've got him in WCW. And I mean, a lot of this match was essentially grounding Rey Mysterio, and they kept the high flying to a bare minimum. And I think that helped with when Rey Mysterio finally did do certain things, the crowd really reacted. We saw him catapult to the floor over the top, and Malenko just wore him down, attacking the left arm. Rhodes explains how size doesn't always win and compares Mysterio to Lex Luger, which might be the only time those two have been compared, with Luger giving up the size to the Giant later tonight, just as Mysterio is to Malenko. Today brings up the fact that Eddie Guerrero had just won the Best of the Super Juniors tournament earlier that week against Jushin Thunder Liger in the final, and there was a grounded offense by Malenko. As I said, he was working on the arm. Variety of submissions, which Dusty clarified as unclin situations, where you would be crying uncle. Malenko then applied a surfboard into a bridge for a two count. Tanay noted that Mysterio impressed a lot of WCW executives at the Inoki Peace Festival and led to him being brought in. All Malenko here, and then Mysterio fights back, hit a springboard dropkick into the ring, got a two count off of that, then did a springboard into a Hurricane Rana, which would later be the West Coast Pop, hooking the legs for a two count, and then Malenko was seated on top. Mysterio hits a top rope Hurricane Rana, and then Malenko catches him with a snap powerbomb, places his legs on the rope for leverage, and gets the pin. They gave them 17 minutes and 50 seconds, and Schiavone puts this over as one of the best matches that WCW has had this year. Did you agree, Mr. Abraham?
This match is incredible. Were there any other people that could have worked it? I guess Chris Benoit could have. Like, I was trying to think, like, Dean Malenko.
Done a Rey Mysterio debut match.
Yeah, like, who could have been the base for him to kind of, like, jump off like that? Because, like,
I thought Malenko was a great choice.
Yeah, because that's the thing, is he was amazing for it, and there's also the cool contrast of styles that you have this guy who's like a submission guy trying to like pull him down as he's flying around.
For the heel babyface dynamic, I thought it worked really well to have, you know, the heel ground is this guy with a bunch of his submissions. I mean, it's hard to believe that this match was on the same show as a time when you had Fire and Ice versus the Steiners or John Tenta versus Big Boss Man, because this match felt like it would have – it definitely still holds up today.
Mm-hmm.
I think Malenko, his style would still be top of the industry today, as would Ray if these two were both in their prime. Do you know what Dean Malenko's catchphrase would be in 2016?
What?
Keep it 1,000. Like that?
You spent all weekend on that one?
No, it came to me while watching the match. But
I wonder how many
make that emoji. You should make that emoji right now.
But you know, it's incredible that we get to see this type of match in the WCW when you can look at the WWF at this time in '96, and I really don't think you'd see anything of this style, of this caliber. I mean, you get great matches, of course, Bret, Shawn, whatever, but you wouldn't see something as lucha-influenced nor as kind of technical, in my opinion, as a Dean Malenko versus Rey Mysterio.
Mm-hmm. No, that was something that continued onward. I mean, WWF, throughout this, you always got the main event, and it was their undercard that was really bare at this point in time. I mean, you had your standout guys, but it was a small pocket of them. And WCW, it was kind of the reverse of that, and you just got so many of these different styles. And this was a big kickoff to that with the addition of Rey Mysterio to that division. And then that contrast, we go to Lex Luger backstage. He says his mind is elsewhere on the main event tonight. He is not going to scream and shout. And he gives a very serious promo about winning the WCW title tonight, and talks about his pride in competing in professional wrestling. He says he is a human being, he can make mistakes, but he can also take advantage of others' mistakes.
And then he made several mistakes about having the belt on his shoulder. I think he said it like three times. And then Mean Gene goes, I'm going to need a belt after this.
Well, this was our double champion, Lex Luger. He was tag and television champion.
Yeah, that's true, I know.
Going after his third title.
It seemed like there was like some, I don't know, it just felt like this was, and I don't know, Lex Luger's not known for his promo, but this might be one of the more awkward ones for me.
Well, Gene Okerlund, whenever he would throw out one of those just random lines at the end, if you didn't understand what he was trying to refer, you just assumed it was sexual.
I think this time he's referring to getting drunk. He said, I'm going to
need alcohol and sex. Those were some of the underlying motifs of a Gene Okerlund sign-off. Then we go to the main event. Big Bubba with Jimmy Hart taking on the man, John Tenta. That's not a fish.
That was his nickname?
That's the nickname I'm giving him. Oh, the man.
And he's all, his ring gear is kind of like foretelling the Paul Heyman era of booking a big show. You know, where you have the pants, but then you have your ring gear underneath.
What a man wears is pants.
Like, I'm going to wear my wrestling gear, but I'm going to also wear my slacks because, you know, it's harder to move.
It's also what you wear when you have no identity whatsoever.
Well, his identity now was John Tenta. and Bubba and Jimmy Hart come to the ring carrying the hair of John Tenta, man, which they've been holding on to for 3 weeks.
I mean, I think more sad is not, you know, the fact that John Tenta kept this half-shaved head for however two, three weeks.
They explained
weeks.
Why, Wei.
Why?
They said that Tenta wants to look in the mirror every morning and remind himself of what Bubba did to him. Because if he were to grow the hair back, he might run the risk of forgetting what happened 3 weeks ago.
That's so stupid. But okay.
I would be more concerned if he grew his hair out and forgot something so important that happened 3 weeks ago involving him at this age. I mean, wouldn't that be concerning? He forgot?
You just tie a string around his finger.
Maybe we should try.
Like, oh, yeah, when the guy cut my hair off.
Why don't we cut half your beard off, Damien?
Well, I was going to say, have you seen Last Man on Earth? Did you watch that TV show?
No.
Did you watch that TV show?
No.
Okay, well, let's move on.
We don't watch anything but pro wrestling.
A very funny TV show. Both of you should watch it. It's a good comedy.
Cool.
Okay. All right.
Okay. We're going to leave it there. No, but I promise. Promise me. Both
did
of you.
Did either of you take note of Big Bubba's... the writing on the back of his shirt, which unfortunately didn't really get marketed all that well. His tagline, Big Bubba, No Trouble.
It's got a good rhyme to it.
Doesn't even rhyme.
Big Bubba, No Trouble. No, it's one of those Sting and Mings where you think it rhymes and then you're told later it doesn't rhyme.
It's no Keep It 1000.
No, it's not. That was a lost opportunity. They fought on the floor to start and Bubba knocked him off the turnbuckle. The announcers warn us ahead of time, this will not be pretty. Bubba gets sent into the steps, and Tenta leaps ass-first repeatedly into Bubba in the corner. Bubba then wraps the ankle of Tenta lightly around the post, and then they debate over words that Dusty is attempting to pronounce. Tenta then catches Bubba off the turnbuckle, slams him down for a pin in 5 minutes and 24 seconds as Jimmy Hart gets onto the apron, turns his back to the action, and has to turn around to reveal the fact that his man, Big Bubba, got into some trouble and lost the match. And then Tenta, the big angle was the post-match, he grabbed the scissors and goes to cut the beard of Big Bubba, who then retreats to the floor and yells, he cut it off! And this whole time he's covering it, where I don't think a thing was cut. And then Tenta informs the camera that he is not done and then does his earthquake stomp. So this will continue. And unlike Big Al and Tank Abbott, there at least was a beard that he was trying to cut off. Though in both cases, I think Big Al and Big Bubba did not lose any facial hair.
I think anytime you involve either scissors or knives in a wrestling match, unless it's New Jack,
just want to say that exact thing.
It'll look really corny, and it's very hard to suspend your disbelief for. You simply can't use those objects unless you're stabbing a guy.
Unless you're going to try and kill a person, because that's really the only outcome with those stuff.
And here, like, they're doing all this teasing with the scissors, and it just, like, by the time they tried to make contact, you could tell nothing was happening. And it just came across really poor, I thought.
In the era where it became a very popular spot to have the guy that emerges from under the ring, how did they not book Shark Attacks by John Tenta?
Whoa, that'd be a cool.
Wow.
And instead of smoke, it would be like red liquid coming up, like Jaws.
And he would have like some type of fin on his
head. If a character was leaving.
Yeah.
That would be the write-off.
Or the fin was...
The shark attack.
The fin was in the crowd. He'd be in the crowd. Like, with the fin on
top. Well, the fin could come up and cut
the rope.
The canvas
blade
open as it circled.
That's
and then you pull him into the cut-open ring.
I like John's idea. That's
kind of
cool.
And you never see that character again.
They could have done that, yes.
I kind of think it's dangerous to have scissors lying around backstage at WCW at this time.
Oh, yeah.
You know, there's some people that are a little stabby with those things.
Well, one half of those parties was gone, so.
That's true.
He could have taken the half of his skull remaining, and he could have shaped it up into a mohawk like a fin.
Then he could have gone full shark.
Yeah.
God, could you have imagined Finn Balor coming around in 96 instead of
the Finn shark match?
He would have had a shark gimmick, 100%.
But that wouldn't be his name, right? Like, he wouldn't have picked that.
He'd be like, no, he'd do a Finding Nemo gimmick. Isn't that like the...
No, Finding Dory is the new one.
Oh, okay. Yes.
My kid's really excited, Dory.
What are the big kid shows now?
Right now,
with
my eldest son, it's wrestling. He wants to watch wrestling. I've shown him one match so far. I've shown him one match.
Necro Butcher and Joe?
Yeah, Necro Butcher Joe. I'm like, okay, son, get ready. This is going to blow your fucking mind. No, I showed him Ricky the Dragon.
You know your dad's met him, right?
I haven't met either of those two people, John. But have you?
Joe, I have. Necro by phone.
Well, there you go. So that's not now who's name dropping?
You asked me a question.
I don't know.
What did your kid? What match did you show you?
Ricky the Dragon Steamboat versus Macho Man.
Oh, okay. What do you think?
He loved it. He loved
it. Who did he want to win more?
I don't know. I was trying to gauge that from like as I'm watching him. I think obviously probably Ricky the Dragon Steamboat. I think like not knowing either of the participants and just kind of see that like you know he is that charismatic person that you just like even as a kid I remember. Hostess Potato Chips. You guys are so young. You might not remember this.
Yeah, of course. Are you kidding me?
Well, no, wait. Well, I got this. Do you remember when they gave out the WWF stickers?
No.
Boom. John, do you remember this?
I do remember that, actually. Yep.
You're lying.
No, I'm not. I'll tell you what I remember, though, is when KFC was giving out those WWF figure stamps. Remember those?
Oh, yeah. There's an Undertaker one.
Ultimate Warrior one.
But anyway, continue. I got the Ricky the Dragon Steamboat sticker.
Yeah.
And I could, and I was like, this guy's amazing. And it's just a picture of him with a tank top looking at the camera. He's not even doing anything. And I'm like, this is my favorite wrestler. So I think it's genetic.
Wow.
Passed down to my son.
There you go.
And Necro Butcher. You know, I like the
well, ring. So what else are you going to show him?
I was debating where to go. I'd be open to your suggestions.
Well, you have the WWE Network as of today, right? Unless it gets canceled tomorrow.
My wife was canceling it as I was leaving the house.
No way.
I swear to God.
But you've paid for the month, haven't you?
That's what I was like. She's like, yeah, but you're going to forget to cancel it, aren't you? And I'm like, yeah, there's probably a good chance I would forget to cancel it.
So you subscribe for a day to watch this.
Mm-hmm.
And you've theoretically paid $12 for 24 hours of
Couldn't even watch it. Couldn't even watch it.
I mean, there's a takeover special
in a few weeks. I did watch... they had some replay on last night. I was so tired by the end of it. Because I was like, oh, they don't have this pay-per-view. Might as well see what's on the network. And it was something that kind of interesting. So I got, like, you know, I got, like, one show out of it. That's how much I'd love Review Away, that I'm willing to throw money to the WWE. Just, like, take my money. I got to pay to be hanging out with my friends. They make me pay to hang out with them.
Well, I just think that you could maximize your dollars. It would be...
John, I'm not very good at fighting.
What would be the analogy, Wade? It'd be
what?
Filling up my tank of gas when I'm going to sell my car tomorrow.
I think you get like prorated your refund, though, if you cancel it.
I think so,
right
too.
Away.
I think so.
So instead you spent like 40 cents for the Great American Bash.
Yeah. And they didn't even have it on the on-demand thing. They have got like all these other weird – that's the thing. The on-demand thing that they have on the Rogers
Damien, I don't
channel?
Think I've used that on-demand thing ever.
So weird.
They had – like 12 hours of stuff the first time they launched it, and on the website you have everything. There's no reason to go to that Rogers on.
I know. I went to the website when you could only do it through the IP blocker, and it was great.
There are a lot of people that don't know how to hook up their computers to their TV. You know, a lot of people don't have computers, period.
Yep.
Well, then you're probably not subscribing to this.
Probably not listening to this podcast, no.
No. How would you find out?
Well, maybe you're listening to that imaginary radio station that we talked about earlier.
Yeah. Okerlund is backstage.
I have no idea what you guys are talking about.
Remember when John was talking about telling that guy on Twitter about a fake radio station?
No.
Oh, there you go.
I don't remember.
I was bringing it. I was making reference to it earlier in the show.
When in doubt, just
that
say
was
yes.
A long time ago. That was like a whole hour and 10 minutes.
Listen, we're making pretty good progress on.
We're killing this show.
We're midway through the show. We have time to spare. Okerlund is backstage with a Sears catalog commercial consisting of Steve McMichael, Kevin Green, and their wives, all in their football jackets.
Yes.
This was like the high school photo op.
Yeah.
And this actually made sense later. McMichael says he doesn't care about game plans. Green's yelling like a maniac, and the word baby was used more than Dusty's electricity. And then Randy Savage enters and says that the smell of winning is in the air, which I wrote as the smell of winning is in the hair. And then he added, and a little perfume too. And then he just races off. And Okerlund worries that Woman and Elizabeth are known to have a trick or two up their sleeve or elsewhere.
Oh.
Gene.
Maybe in their back pocket?
Yeah, you can't get away with a little something gross.
That's Gene Okerlund. All he needed is
Has he ever... He should do an adult comedy record. You know, like a
An album?
Like, yeah, like but like an X-rated style 70s lounge record, you know? Like, he's got the voice for it.
He can.
Do some of his blue comedy.
Yeah. I think he'd be good at it.
I think he'd be really good.
Yeah, he's got that type of delivery.
I'm surprised he hasn't been like one of those guys that's shown up on Howard Stern and kind of in that realm. He must just not want it.
Right. Or maybe they haven't found him.
I'm sure they.
Yeah, what was I going to say? Or for that WWE, Camp WWE, I think he'd be good for that.
Yeah. And he could write his own material for that show.
Yeah, he should be a lead writer on that show.
Up next was the Falls Count Anywhere match between Chris Benoit and Kevin Sullivan. Sullivan billed from the Iron Gates of Fate. So fate is guarded by the Iron Gates.
Yeah, again, I mean, definitely I feel like a transition period for WCW in that you were doing an angle with the NWO, very much, you know, based on reality, insider terminology, things like that. And then you have the Taskmaster built from the Iron Gates of Fate.
Which doesn't make sense.
The Iron Gates of Fate.
Fate is inevitable. Fate is... There's no control over it, so why should there be an obstacle
is the
to
Iron
get
Gates
to fate?
Is that a reference to something? Because Kevin Sullivan being, you know, is
I don't care if it's a reference
guy.
To anything. It doesn't make any sense.
Let me Google the Iron
How can
Gates
fate,
fate
be guarded by anything? Like, you have to get through these
well,
gates
that
for fate
sense.
To be achieved?
Like, yeah, you have
your
to.
Your fate is well, your fate.
You're a lyricist.
If you go out and get hit by a bus, yeah, that's going to happen, okay. No Wait, matter what.
I got it. King Crimson.
Oh, there we go. This is why Kevin Sullivan rules. It's a King Crimson
Iron
reference.
Gates of
it's a bad
between,
reference.
Between the Iron Gates of Fate, the seeds of time were sown.
That's a, do you know King Crimson? Prog rock? Like, this is some, like, deep stoner shit.
This was from songsoup.com. The Iron Gates of Fate allude to a prophecy concerning the death of Frederick II, a prophecy that could also serve as an epitaph. I'm not going to read.
More. So I think that's kind of cool. I think that's right. He's very learned.
It's really nice.
Not just a Satanist, also a learned man.
Yeah, that's kind of sure.
Before we start this.
And a Booker man.
The Booker man as well, a clip that they used to death at this time period. Was this your first Chris Benoit match you have watched in a long time?
Yeah, actually, I think the last time I watched... No, I've definitely watched stuff on YouTube and things like that. It's almost like... It's weird because you... With, like, so many people in our pop culture, it seems like a new person every day that if you're going to try and... You know, if you're going to try and consume the content that they put out there, you almost have to divorce the reality from what you're seeing. You know, so I forget when I'm watching this, this is the same Chris Benoit that would...
Did you make an effort not to watch Chris Benoit matches?
No, I don't...
Or you just never ran into him?
Like, I would run into him. Like, when we did a show one time, yeah. I watched one. I'll watch him
You
on
make
YouTube.
It sound so casual. Like, oh, yeah, I ran into him.
No. Like, you run into the matches because it's just, like, he's such a part of wrestling. Like, you know, like, that he's, like, one of those people that weaves his way through the entire story of 90s wrestling.
Every promotion.
Every promotion. Yep. So
every country.
Every Yeah. And
he worked with Bob Mould.
He worked with Bob Mould. Actually, I didn't ask about that. That was one. I don't think that's one thing you would never do. Actually, you'd never ask someone who knows him. Like that's the, you
what
know, like
more
we're,
is there,
we're
what
talking
more
about,
is there to be said at this point?
Yeah, exactly. Like it's kind of a hard. Yeah. It's like such a, but there's so many people that we have. You know, obviously this is the one of the most horrendous cases of that. But where you have people where you respect their work, but you have to divorce the human being from the work in order to try and watch it.
I think that's what we try to do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you really do get to see that this guy was a genius in that ring.
Yeah.
Well, this match, I thought this match was excellent for what it was. They started fighting in the aisle. They went into the crowd. They're laying in shots and were just going at one another into the concession area and then into the men's washroom. And a crowd forms in the washroom, and Sullivan shuts the door on Benoit's head. Dusty loves this. He loses his mind when he spots a woman in the men's bathroom.
Back him up, Doug Dillinger, having a hard time right there with security. Wow. I tell you,
there's a lady. There's a lady in the men's bathroom. Look at that. There is a woman in the men's john right here in Baltimore. you believe that?
Yes, I can.
She just stopped off. So they got to get some relief here, baby.
Where's he throwing? He's throwing down the laundry chute now. That thing allowed to sneak through. You know how them chutes do? And come out on the roof here somewhere.
I've seen everything. A night of first. I never thought he's got a roll of
towels. Hit him with some toilet paper.
This is the closest we got to the North Carolina controversy in 96.
And this has also come up on the MSL Sullivan show.
Did it?
Yeah, they someone wrote in to ask like about the woman being in the bathroom, and apparently it happened so quickly that she got trapped in the bathroom. She was like a staffer for WCW.
Oh, okay.
And then they were in the bathroom, and she's like trapped in this.
At that point, is anyone really caring?
Well, exactly. But it's like someone wrote in to ask about it on that show. It's amazing Kelvin Sullivan's retention for details on things like that. Like, it's.
Did he speak more about the match? Like. You know, I'd love to know, like, if did they have to knock on all the stalls and tell people to get out of there.
He talked about it like they'd pre-cleared that they were going to go in there, so they could.
They had to clean up the washroom. Did they have to?
I don't think
they leave it messy.
I don't know. And also, could you ever get it clean enough? Like, were you ever
to take bumps on?
Yeah, exactly. That's what I mean.
Man, no way.
Or there's like sometimes you'll see someone put another guy's head in the toilet, and you're like, "How is that a new toilet?"
I wonder if that'll be a future DVD. The best of the bathroom brawls. You have this. You have Vince and Austin at the Rumble in 99. You have Austin and Pillman, where Pillman's head's put into the toilet.
It's a YouTube playlist.
Big Show getting pissed on by – remember the GTV
angle?
The
best of feces in pro wrestling, I think you could put that out.
The best of feces.
And then the poo drop, when they drop the poo, DX.
Sure, the bulldozer, the wheelbarrow full of shit.
Fecal matter.
Yeah.
The best or worst.
How about Fecal Matters? And then it could be like interstitials on the WWE Network. Why are we working for them right now? We're coming up with brilliant content.
Yeah. We should only review shit in wrestling. Matches with shit.
So they're fighting in the bathroom. And this is where Schiavone takes a shot at Pillman, tucking his tail and running. So the fact that this man was in a near-fatal accident, not that, you know... not that further removed here from the Great American Bash, and yet we still have to take shots at the guy on top of things. Kind of unnecessary.
Who?
Pillman. This was after the Humvee accident. Right. So clearly bitter feelings that he had left, but nonetheless being brought up all over on this show. They make their way down the arena steps with Benoit getting tossed onto them. Benoit brings out a table ringside and sets it up in the ring against the ropes, and then Benoit's draped on top. There's a superplex by Benoit off the table, into the ring, and he pinned Sullivan in 10 minutes. This was just a great brawl. There was no wasted time. The crowd loved this. This was unique at the time because this wasn't where we had a million and one hardcore matches where they all just brawled into random spots. I thought this was great. Mm-hmm. I thought this was a really intense brawl. Went the right amount of time. 10 minutes. We didn't have any potted plants.
I thought it was all right. I mean, I think, yeah, sure, for a plunder match, it was maybe a better plunder match, but it was still a plunder match by the end of it. And, you know, maybe I had to be there at the time. Maybe it was more novel. But having seen so many WWE-style matches like this, it just didn't...
There weren't a ton of weapons in this, though.
Yeah,
it was the table.
Just the slow...
I didn't think any of this was slow.
Yeah, I was
going to
say,
pretty
come
fast
on.
Pace.
Compared to Jericho, Dean Anderson, this... Dean Anderson, sorry. Dean Ambrose, this moved like
it's for me. It's just like moving from room to room and smashing a dude's head into a random object that I've never really been a fan of. You know,
I don't know. I loved once again it comes back to FMW, but I loved it when they did this stuff in FMW, and I still like you know I wouldn't want to see two people do this on a show or like more than one match do this on a show, but I think like it broke it up. You know, like I kind of.
There's a lot of variety on this show.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. But then you had like things like the hitting Sullivan hitting Benoit over the head with a bag of paper towels. That just took me right out of it. I don't think you need stuff like
Wait,
that.
When you were fighting for your life, you'd grab anything.
Yeah, paper towels, yes. that rough brown kind, yes.
When I was a kid,
one ply.
I went to a camp and one of the counselors put a toilet paper roll between his thumb and his pinky finger and punched a camper in the face, and it hurt the camper, but didn't make any mark.
Weird. Wow, that's some death touch.
It was some crazy thing. Wow. Anyway, so it can hurt.
Man, okay. You hanging out with some lethal weapons.
I was just a kid. I was like, this That was like when I first learned that humanity is the devil. Like, that's a camp. Counselor punching a kid.
That was the Iron Gates of Fate Camp.
That was the Iron Gates of Fate Camp. I wish I was listening to King Crimson.
So afterwards, Jimmy Hart... Fuck, Jimmy Hart is all over this show. Runs down. Arn Anderson comes down. And at this point, they had been having tension with Arn Anderson and Benoit and kind of teasing Arn Anderson aligning himself with Sullivan during this whole program. He pulls Benoit off of Sullivan, and then it's Arn that attacks Sullivan, and this place went nuts for Arn aligning himself with his horseman brethren, Chris Benoit. And it led to the Dungeon of Doom, the remnants of the Dungeon of Doom. And what a who's who this was. Big Bubba, the Faces of Fear, and Maxix running down. See, two X's. Giant reaction for the Horsemen here in this. And their night was not done yet either. But, man, this place went crazy for Arn. Aligning with Benoit.
They went crazy here. But it made them baby faces. It made the Horsemen baby faces leading into their main event where they're to play heels against Mongo and Kevin Green.
It did, but I think that was all the bigger payoff for later.
How?
I think you were teasing here.
It made the crowd like these guys.
I don't think that was the worst thing in the world.
Oh, but it didn't fit the story.
That's why this to me, honestly, and this is going to be me going down one of my weird tangents, so bear with me. It's going to bring comic books back into
30
it.
Seconds.
This is one of those things like DC, and you know, DC comic books, when like before they do one of their Crisis on Infinite Universes type thing, the whole universe is spiraling out of control. That's what this really felt like. Like heels and faces were breaking down. Like there's this part where Lex Luger walks by Eric Bischoff as he's taken out, and it's almost like he's breaking character and looking at Eric Bischoff being injured before he has to go into this other match. Like, it feels like there's going to be a whole reset coming with the NWO angle. And it's already starting.
Yeah. We'll get into that later with the Horseman angle coming up later. But before that, we had Lord Steven Regal taking on Sting in a battle of lifestyle choices. Sting Irish whips Regal into the corner and to the floor, and then back body drops him. This is when Schiavone mentions that they have a series of Northeast shows coming up, including a show at the theater at Madison Square Garden, which is adjacent to the building, with Bruno Sammartino coming in as a guest referee for the set of shows, as well as Pedro Morales, who was doing Spanish commentary for WCW at the time. Sting made these poses mocking Regal, and then Regal took the advantage, and I thought Regal's offense looked great throughout this. Hit him with an open hand palm strike to the face, isolated the left arm, worked it over. He's rubbing Sting's face in the mat, his elbow into his face. It's all Regal in this. Not all that different than the Malenko match in terms of just getting all the heat on the heel. Schiavone, this is where he brings up Sting's brown hair and the big topic of discussion being his hair choice in and out of the locker room. Sting finally lands a drop kick. He fires back with clotheslines. Regal applies the Regal stretch, but then gives up the hold and backhands Sting, who no-sells this. Sting drops him with repeated shots, knees up for the Stinger splash, but then Sting takes a back body drop and gets the Scorpion Deathlock as the crowd erupts for this comeback and the finish, and Sting gets the win at 16:31, and watching the television, you certainly saw them heating up Regal, and I thought Regal looked really good in this match, and, I mean, this crowd loved Sting. I mean, this was all built around his quick comeback at the end. Did you guys think this went too long? It was 16 and a half minutes.
Maybe at times.
And it was later in the show.
Yeah, maybe at times. But, I mean, I still, in 2016, really enjoyed seeing a Steven Regal match. And
I thought it was great.
Up against, you know, at this time, the top babyface on this show, in my opinion, in Sting. And I thought Regal just played a tremendous heel, doing a lot of that talking in ring to the camera that you see Kevin Owens and, you know, Bully Ray do a lot on Raw. Great exaggerated facial expressions. And, of course, a really unique style of pro wrestling, considering the roster and the style of the roster at the time, that it's – because we see it so rarely, that European style, it's still like – a mystery to me, and I still love watching a lot of his old matches from the 90s because you kind of get to see him at his peak in his prime.
I thought he was also amazing at working the crowd too. Like he, you know, goes to the floor and actually is going up to individual people in the crowd and riling them up, which of course riles up the people around them. You could just see that he was like, he's like just like such the perfect heel.
Mm. Did either of you see the video Kevin Owens posted after the house show on the weekend in Wisconsin? Yeah. Is posted. He's walking down to the ring, and it's a singles match with him and Sami Zayn. And he looks into the camera and says, my goal in this match is to get these Americans to chant USA for a match with two Canadians. And it cuts to a USA chant near midway through the match, and he just looks into the camera. See? They're idiots. It was great. Awesome. It was just great. There was this very campy Bash at the Beach promo, which would be
campy and expensive looking.
Yeah, a little bit. It's the deserted guy out with some chicks on an island.
It's like the thing. Where did this company spend its money? It's like on that stuff, but they're not spending it on backstage sets or lighting people properly for backstage
contracts. They're spending
it on but they're spending on production for these videos. But then it goes to Mean Gene interviewing people, and it's kind of like dark when he's interviewing Mongo, McMichaels, and Green. You know?
It certainly wasn't a promo that reflected what that event would be, where you're teasing this hostile takeover.
They shoot these like months in advance. To this day, they do that. Yeah. And they don't really know,
and you wouldn't know too at this point. Like they wouldn't know in storyline that this was coming.
So instead, what can we focus on? Beach.
Well, I mean,
sand.
The signings of Hall and Nash were known by February, early March, and this did feel like something that was mapped out. I mean, you had
the storyline they wouldn't know.
I mean, it's not a big deal. This was a quick 30-second spot, and it was just, hey, I'm Bash sure the Beach, buy it.
They would have probably done a second promo after that.
Ric Flair and Arn Anderson. With Woman and Elizabeth, there was no sign of Jimmy Hart in this match, taking on Steve McMichael and Kevin Green with their coach, Bobby Heenan. Sorry, with Randy Savage, and Heenan was with the Horsemen. And yes, McMichael and Kevin Green came out to this ripoff of the Monday Night Football theme with WCW incorporated into the lyrics. And if I can find this song,
please,
we will play it.
So I guess Jimmy Hart did make a bit of an appearance.
You're
in this
right.
Match.
He probably was the mastermind. With master like quotations
so
behind
corny.
This song.
It was like something you'd hear on like, what was it? Mr. Show. Like,
Hulk Hogan's album.
So corny. Yeah.
If Hulk Hogan went to play football. They brought out Bobby Heenan, and Michael Buffer did the introductions, and they muted the word Federation. So I guess they were putting over Heenan's accolades outside of WCW for his intro. And Savage got a huge reaction coming out here, and he had been suspended from television at this point as part of his storyline. And then when Nitro did a less than spectacular number the week before, they announced he was now reinstated and would be back the next night on Nitro to face Ric Flair on free television. Gigantic sign that someone put together of Mongo sucks facing the hard camera at the start of this. And then we never saw this. This was like a bed sheet. With this it was ridiculous. It was comedic how large this Mongo sucks sign was for Mr. Steve McMichael.
It's a waste of a bed sheet.
The now former voice of Monday Nitro by this point. Schiavone shares a story early on where he was talking with Steve McMichael about when he signed with the Green Bay Packers, and he told Schiavone he signed with them for the money, which was our little telltale sign of how Steve McMichael's business mind works.
Did you hear him on Ric Flair's podcast when they had Mongo McMichaels on?
No.
That is an incredible listen.
Oh, yeah?
He is a wild man.
I have a lot to listen to now. I have a lot of podcasts to listen to now.
Bring you guys up to speed. You don't have to listen to them now. I'm telling you what's happening.
Okay.
McMichael lands a flying shoulder tackle to Arn Anderson. They double-teamed Arn. Green wanted in with Flair. Green just looked crazy here in this match. And I mean, for these two guys, I don't know if there was a better Steve McMichael match than this one. I mean, this guy was pretty awful, and this might have peaked in this match.
I'll definitely say, like, for two.
Kevin Green had a lot of potential. Kevin Green, to me, if he stuck with this, he would have been the standout over McMichael.
For two football players, like, they were definitely very charismatic and seemed more comfortable.
They took it
in the
seriously
than most. Better than LT, I'll say, both of these guys.
Which, do you know who was part of LT's entourage at WrestleMania that year?
Kevin Green?
Steve McMichael.
Oh.
So within the court. In that same year, he appeared at WrestleMania and the first Monday Nitro.
Whoa.
Steve McMichael, all over the place.
Did you know about that on Ric Flair's podcast?
I did not hear that. Ric Flair's podcast is now defunct, so I wasn't giving it a plug.
Yeah.
Don't worry.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, he's apparently jumping to another network.
Oh, wow.
That's the room.
Come back and tell us.
You're up on every podcast.
Why don't we just do a podcast review? You can come in and do your own show reviewing all the other podcasts.
Oh, come on, John.
When are you going to be on Talking Sheet?
Well, I was today, basically, hopefully.
Yeah.
Green comes in. He's doing the strut for a big reaction. The crowd was certainly into these two, minus the guys with the bedsheet. Savage stopped Ric Flair from leaving after Flair sold for Green and brought him back to the ring. Flair's in with McMichael. No selling chops, and then McMichael chops Flair. Flair and Arn were really probably the two best opponents you could put in here with these guys, and they were ambitious here. This went very long. McMichael applied a figure four. A lot of this was the strength of the selling of Ric Flair. Woman raked the eyes of McMichael, and then all the women are on the floor arguing, and it leads to all four leaving to the back, including Deborah and Tara Green, who we would not see probably ever again.
Yeah, what happened to Tara?
I have no
idea. Tara Green, what a name. It sounds like Poison Ivy's, a sidekick. Tara Green.
They got the heat on McMichael. Heenan kicks him on the floor. There's a low blow by Flair behind the ref's back, and it built to a hot tag to Kevin Green, which was made. Flair did his Flair flip into the corner, right into a Mongo boot on the apron. Anderson then clips the left knee of Kevin Green, and they're talking about his future as a football player, because this guy was an active NFL player before they banned football players from doing pro wrestling, for good reason. And this guy, part of the Carolina Panthers at the time. And then the figure four was applied by Flair. Savage attacks Arn. Then Benoit runs down to attack Savage. And then Elizabeth and Woman return with Deborah, who has ditched her high school football jacket and is now wearing a dress. And she comes down. She's got a briefcase. And she opens up the briefcase to show Mongo not only a Horseman t-shirt in the briefcase, but money. The same currency that stole him from the Chicago Bears. And Steve McMichael just says, fuck this guy, Kevin Green. I'm taking the real Green. And he blasts his buddy right in the head with the briefcase, and Flair gets on top and pins him. 20 minutes and 53 seconds. And unlike most of these turns, I really liked the fact that we didn't just do, let's beat up these guys for 20 minutes, and then he turns on his partner for no goddamn reason. Here was a guy that in the middle of all this saw that his enemies wanted to recruit him.
Yes.
And he said, fuck this guy. This is a way better path. These guys are real. These are the horsemen. And they want me.
I think I would have enjoyed it more if maybe Mongo had shown some frustration, or if there were some rifts between Mongo and Kevin Green within the body of the match. Here, the swerve is just so blatant and so a briefcase of money. Oh, I'm a bad guy now. Like, it was just funny, and it was campy.
I would have liked it if they had shown the exchange that had happened backstage, because it happened pretty quickly for them to be okay, we're going to kill your friend. Here's a dress. You get change. Here's a bunch of money.
I wanted to see Tara laid out in the back.
They were how did it all go? That thing, okay, welcome backstage. Here's the plan. We're going to give you a bunch of money. Go talk to your husband.
Imagine Batman versus Superman, and then Lex Luthor hands Superman a briefcase of money, and he turns on Batman. I don't know. It's just.
Are you telling me?
And we all know in real life, briefcases of money can get people off trial for murder, allegedly, in wrestling, in real life.
What?
Allegedly, according to a book, allegedly, Vince McMahon showed up with a briefcase, allegedly, and then someone out of trouble.
Story.
John gets
with the snooker case.
But I will say, I thought the match was actually quite entertaining. I thought the crowd heat was tremendous, and I thought,
if you were to say at the beginning, these guys are going to go 20 minutes, yeah. I don't care if it's Flair or Arn, that's ambitious.
Yep.
And I thought they did a very good job.
Yep. I thought it was, your very basic formula, but I thought the two football players did really well, and Flair and Arn.
Mongo probably should have been a tag team his entire run.
Sure.
I mean, it was him as a singles performer was not good. All the guys loved him, though.
Charisma, I think you can't
deny. He was a tremendous personality. Yeah. I think you needed a guy in there. And it was very much contingent on their opponents. Mm-hmm. But I think he would have benefited a lot more and grown as a performer working with a veteran that could have done the heavy lifting, and you have Mongo for the hot tag and evolve that way. He never had an identity as a singles guy.
Right.
During his whole run. Afterwards, Savage shoves McMichael, and the Horsemen beat down Savage. Flair hits him in the head with the briefcase. Heenan and McMichael shake hands, which Schiavone noted after they hated one another as broadcasters on Nitro. And Schiavone brings up the line about Mongo signing with the Packers. And Dusty says, "This rots my stomach." Little did Dusty know what he was in store for next. This was tough because you were doing two major angles back to back involving your heel factions. Because next, we had to get over the betrayal by Steve McMichael and Deborah, that Jezebel, and into Eric Bischoff at the entrance area calling out Scott Hall and Kevin Nash.
Before he does, though, he's like, oh, what a shocking turn of events that was. Like, almost like dismissing it. Like, oh, that's some storyline stuff. Now back to reality.
He had heat on himself here for his angle. There was a light diesel chant, which was as unprofessional as keeping your phone on during a podcast.
Well, I might be my wife with my sick child at home.
Maybe she's resubscribed to the network and she's just letting you know. She's watching Clash of the Champions Dixie Dynamite right now with the children.
It's not my sick wife. It's my boss.
Oh, boy.
My sick child. Sorry.
The boss. So where were we after we were
I don't know.
Set off track?
I have no idea.
The diesel chant began. Nash and Hall, in particular Nash, just towered over Eric Bischoff. This was Baron Corbin JoJo-esque. And Bischoff says they're going to get their match at Bash at the Beach. And both say they are asked, point blank, do you work for the WWF? And they each say, no, they don't. Which was probably not a line they wanted to use, but legally had to at this point as... Things were getting intense between these two companies, and lawsuits were going to be thrown out left, right, and center.
And I feel like at this point, 3 weeks in, I don't think you even needed that, you know, WWE association anymore. I think it definitely helped at the start, but now...
You cared about what was happening here.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's like no one... I think even, you know, fans that wanted to suspend disbelief were under the impression, listen, they're not working together, but this is going to be a cool storyline.
Yeah.
It's better that these guys are... WCW talent at this point, which was, you know, of course there were going to be audiences that didn't know these things. But anyway, they got over this really quickly with the question and both moving on. And they state they have a surprise buddy coming. Bischoff says he's going to tell them on Nitro who their opponents will be. And Hall comes back saying people spent money on this pay-per-view and you're going to make them wait for the free television program? That's why this company's in the state it's in, Eric. And then Nash agrees with this cheap thrill for a quarter hour popping and then hit him in the chest and powerbomb Bischoff off the stage through not a table but like a wooden crate that was covered with a Great American Bash
throw.
What would you call it?
Flag. Banner.
Banner, sure. And, I mean, this was a hell...
Yeah.
Of a physical angle. Mm-hmm. I mean, that was not a bump you saw all too often, and the fact that it was Eric Bischoff taking it was pretty incredible. This was a really, really big angle, and I thought was done great as the powerbomb was. The selling by Schiavone and Dusty, they both deserve a lot of credit because they were great, I thought.
No, I don't know. I disagree with you there.
Boy.
I don't know how you be the tiebreaker, Damien, because I thought maybe in 2016 I have different expectations, but I thought – Schiavone especially just was kind of doing his typical, you know, trying to act. And I think in recent times the announcers have learned to speak less in situations like these.
I think, yeah, like post-reality TV show era, like you have different expectations. But I like Tony Schiavone was like Eric Bischoff was the host of Nitro, like he was using past tense to describe Eric Bischoff. Like he was selling like this guy's dead. And, like, they don't know. So, like, yeah, like, it wasn't like today where they would, if they were playing it for real, they would do all the tricks that you
ignore
can do.
It.
They throw up the axe and they do all the stuff that you do now.
But, I thought they handled it really well. I mean, you had, you go to Schiavone and Dusty, who, I mean, at this point he's taken off his leather jacket because it's just, it's really gotten heated inside the Baltimore Arena.
That would be a hot jacket to be wearing for that long,
and,
too.
I mean, you have Dusty, who's left alone here by Schiavone. And Dusty talks about how this situation has, quote, exculated. And Schiavone goes to check on Eric. Dusty is speaking solo here, filibustering. And he's so distraught that he throws to David Penzer and has to correct himself, saying it's Michael Buffer. And Buffer never even takes the cue. And Luger comes out. He checks on Bischoff as he's walking to the ring. And Schiavone returns, stating he himself has had neck surgery, so he was concerned about Bischoff's neck and spine. Now, my biggest complaint about this would be months later, where Bischoff turned out to be the mastermind behind the NWO, rendering this angle ridiculous, and it made no logical sense.
Maybe he padded the...
I hate that stuff. where we've got to, oh, they were just trying to fool people as your way of making sense of it. That to me was, it was a very poor thought out way to get Eric Bischoff into the NWO, because this angle was really impactful at the time. Mm-hmm. And it was very similar, like you're pairing Vince with Austin, where it's like after all this, they're working together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like the angle because it was just so sudden and brief, but very shocking. And they also, I mean, at the end of this, they didn't really tell you anything more. You still did have to tune into Nitro to actually get, you know, the actual morsel of information that they were kind of promising. So, but nonetheless, you left satisfied after watching this pay-per-view and seeing this big spot. So I was really impressed watching these episodes of Nitro and this show, how little actual information they gave out. And sort of like how well they did the slow burn leading up to the Bash at the Beach.
Like, this was 3 weeks in, and what we had learned was they're going to have a match.
Yep.
They milked all of this.
And did you ever feel unsatisfied watching the show? I didn't. You know, you saw Hall appear. That's a big one. You saw Nash appear. That's a big one. And then you saw this powerbomb. That's also a big event.
Go back to the night they aligned WCW and ECW. That's the one everyone looks at. And look at the amount they did in that night. Right. We had WWF versus WCW on that show, the alignment of the two together, the return of ECW, Paul Heyman leaving the broadcast to head up this team, Stephanie revealed as the owner. I mean, it was just, they did all of that in a night.
Mm-hmm.
And you compare it to this, where they made every week feel like you were going to get the latest chapter. And they were able to hold off to their match until people would have to pay for it at Bash at the Beach. So the main event, which had to follow two pretty big angles, was the Giant and Lex Luger. And I think to their credit, they did not book this one to go long, which was the right call. Luger runs into a boot to start this one, and he's attacking the Giant, dives onto the back of the Giant for a sleeper, and Jimmy Hart is in his corner. Goes for a megaphone shot, and Sting comes down to stop Jimmy and chases Jimmy to the back. Giant gets him off, wears down Luger. Crowd is very tired at this point, I felt. Giant went for a San Martino-style backbreaker, dropped him, and he's working over the back of Luger. Schiavone notes how the Baltimore Arena, still in shock from earlier, to explain their silence in this main event. Luger hit a drop kick, coming over the ropes, mounted a comeback, clipped the knee of the Giant. Giant then missed a big splash in the corner, was draped on top, and this is where Luger tries to lift him up for the torture rack, but his back gives out, making sense given his back was worked on for the previous couple of minutes, and then Giant just chokeslams Luger and pinned him clean. 9:39, and the Giant says no one is ever going to beat him, and to go off the air, they plug that tomorrow night on Nitro, you're going to find out the announcement of the opponents for Hall and Nash and the Mystery Man for Bash at the Beach as we go into our credit roll and end the Great American Bash of 96. What did you think of the main event?
I thought, like it's definitely, they did the best of what they could do. But, you know, after these two huge angles, one of them being one of the biggest angles in wrestling history, North American wrestling history at least, like, It was fun, but it was definitely kind of, you know.
Yeah, definitely a bit of a calm down.
Yeah, for sure.
It's weird. You had on this show, like, they shot some real – look at some of the angles and matches that you had coming out of this show. Like, beyond just the six-man at the Bash at the Beach, just alone in that Horseman match, you had McMichael Green. You had McMichael Savage. You had Horseman against Kevin Green and company. You'd really heated them up. You had the Giant, who they were putting so much steam on as a heel. And, I mean, in a perfect world, you probably wanted to get the Horsemen to a point where they could be the babyface adversaries that they never fully got to. I mean, there was a very minimal interaction that they would have in 97. But, yeah. I mean, you had a lot of things coming out of this show that gave you many different directions to go in.
Yeah, and I almost wonder if the NWO coming in kind of derailed a lot, because I just feel like the NWO coming in kind of brought in WCW's version of the Attitude Era, and it just kind of changed the tone of the show completely, whereas, you know, you have somebody like the Giant as your champion. It's still very much, I'd say, like an 80s style of production. And with the NWO coming in, it just totally changed all that. But nonetheless, I thought the match wasn't bad, this main event. It was just your kind of typical David Goliath match. I liked the fact that it ended with a clean finish and how the show basically went off the air without you know, the good guy coming up on top with a beatdown or anything. The villain won. End of show. I enjoyed that.
I thought this was a really – I enjoyed this pay-per-view a lot. I think just match quality, it was strong. And I thought angle-wise, there were some big angles on this show coming out of it. So I give this show an 8.5 out of 10.
I'm going to go 7 out of 10.
Wow.
Right in the middle, 7.5 out of 10.
All right. We are going to take a break, and me and Wei are going to come back with feedback. But, Damien, I want to thank you very much.
Thanks for having me.
For coming by.
What was the thing you wanted to talk about?
Oh, yeah.
Plug the article.
I got a wrestling thing coming out in Vice. I'm going to be interviewing Conan. It's going to be out today. But I interview Conan about music.
El Gato?
No, I did not get El Gato. But I do interview him about how he was nearly the Latino Drake.
Wow.
How's that for a hook?
So that's coming out this week?
It's coming out today.
All right. It's out now?
No, it's out as of Wednesday. So
That's today.
Today.
And that's just Vice.com or any subsidiaries?
Vice.com. If you go to Vice.com and look up Damien Abraham or Conan, I'm sure it'll come up.
All right. And you can follow him, Left for Damien.
On all that social media garbage.
We're getting kicked out of here, so we got to go. But thank you very much, Mr. Abraham.
Thank you. Turn Out a Punk podcast, too.
Turned Out a Punk. Robbie Brookside.
Yeah. MVP.
Robbie Brookside, John.
I'll tell you what to say. This thing here now has escalated, if you know what I'm talking about, Tony Schiavone, into a real war situation. That's uncalled for. That's unbelievable.
All right, I'm going to go down there.
Are you? Okay. Yeah, I'll tell you what. Tony's going down there right now. Eric Bischoff. I'll tell you what. We're the big boys play at WCW. So much has been said about our situation. People coming and people going. But coming in here with Eric Bischoff, like him or not, bottom line, right here, and driving him off the stage into a table, that's uncalled for. So they wanted a wall. They talk about, let's have a wall. You get three guys, we get three guys. Well, I'm an old man, guys. Let me tell you something. The bottom line in this situation here, there are plenty of guys at WCW that will be ready for this wall right here. What a scene we have seen here at the Great American Bash. And the thing with Mike Michaels and the Horseman, I'm tell you what. Let's go to the ring. David Pender, take this. I don't know, man. Take this. Michael Buffer. Go ahead, Michael. I'm sorry. Take it, Michael Buffer.
We're back, and Damien is gone. But that was a lot of fun, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. Yeah. Why did we have to kick him out?
Because we are now in a different studio, because the other one... Because
we've arrested him for being associated with...
That's true. There was actually a bust here at our studio, and Damien's gone.
That's right.
Not sticking around for feedback.
Yeah.
He's got some podcasts to go listen to. Well, now he has a reason to come back and listen to this one, because we're not done the show yet.
That's right.
He always says he never wants to listen to...
We're going to quiz him on it afterwards.
All right. Well, let's get into our feedback to the Great American Bash of 96. And we start off with Mick Whalen, who writes that the Great American Bash was just one damn good show. And I can say with certainty that this is easily one of the five best pay-per-views WCW ever put on. The tag opener was good. Paige Bagwell was fine. And Malenko Ray was awesome. The Benoit Sullivan match may have been the best hardcore style match WCW ever had, and Dusty pointing out the woman in the men's bathroom was just gold. Sting and Regal, mostly Regal, then put on one heck of a technical showcase. I was stunned at how well the Horseman-Mongo Green match went. It wasn't a five-star classic, but it told an awesome story, and Mongo's turn was so brilliantly done and foreshadowed that Ray Charles could have shed a tear. Seeing Kevin Nash powerbomb that Ken doll, formerly known as Eric Bischoff, was the icing on the cake. The U.S. title match and the main event sucked, but the rest of the card was either good to fantastic. There were four really good matches in a row, which is just insane to fathom, even in today's work rate paradise that we enjoy. Great American Bash, which he identified as GBA, gets 9. There's a lady in the men's washroom calls out of 10.
Okay, we go to our next piece of feedback, who says, for me, the highlight of the show has to be Malenko versus Rey Mysterio, which was a masterclass in pacing and storytelling. Given how frequently one sees wrestlers who have since passed away on shows from this era, it's nice to see someone like Rey making an impressive debut in a company, knowing that 20 years later, he's still able to entertain people wherever he goes. Also, I have to tip my hat to Tanay, whose call gave that match the attention and gravity it deserved. On a less positive note, Sting's homophobic
homophobic promise to straighten out the prissy Regal was puzzling. Between this feud and Goldust Piper, I'll never understand how a grappling match is meant to rid someone of their perceived homosexuality. Finally, Dusty made an odd anachronistic reference to listening to the show on the radio. Do you guys happen to know when, if ever, wrestling had a real presence on radio, which we kind of discussed? Not to your knowledge, WCW, though.
I mean, WCW did some of those internet shows for a time period.
WCW Live, Bob Ryder.
Well, not WCW Live. They did do the talk show as well, but they also did certain shows that were just like live broadcasts of house shows that they did on the internet, right in the infancy of things as well. So, I mean, there was somewhat of a presence as well.
But
I wonder if people have ever tuned into live audio wrestling, assuming that there was wrestling going on the radio.
We should just switch it up. We should just like make up matches to call.
Yes. Poff Lord from Houston. First off, I must admit that I'm jealous of the Macho Man doppelganger in the front row. He puts my rudimentary sixth grade Macho Man Halloween costume to shame. The Steiners, Norton, and Ice Train better thank their lucky stars that neither of them were severely injured, because there were some rough and reckless suplexes and shoulder breakers being dealt out. I love the Horseman's histrionics throughout the event. I'm sure Flair and the gang had a good time in Baltimore that night. Too bad Flair didn't have an aspiring wrestler buddy on the Baltimore Ravens, because I'm sure the crowd would rather root for a Raven than a Carolina Panther. Malenko and Ray were awesome, and El Gato was the opposite of awesome. I give this show 6.5 shitty Lex Luger ponytails out of 10.
Jesse from the 6 views on WCW Great American Bash 1996. Excellent choice of review. I love it when you're able to provide some continuity with your shows. This is an interesting period in wrestling, as we had the NWO coming in, signaling the beginning edginess and realism, yet WCW is only starting to move away from the ultra-corny gimmicks like Shark in the Dungeon of Doom. I often wonder what kind of transition would have occurred had Hall and Nash not jumped ship. Surely those Dungeon of Doom gimmicks would end, but would Hogan have turned? Who knows? He had a question for our guests, and
kind of covered that.
Yeah, we kind of talked about it.
The question was, what would have occurred had Hall and Nash not jumped ship?
Yeah.
I don't know if they would have eventually turned Hogan, just because the babyface run had certainly fizzled out by this point in 1996. The boos were becoming more prevalent. Certainly when WCW, I mean, the house show business had already turned itself around to a degree with the Flair Savage program. And then it was Hall and Nash that started the television ratings momentum, and Hogan turning had a big impact on pay-per-view numbers. So it was kind of a perfect storm of those that helped their different sectors of business. I think a Hogan heel turn, even without Hall and Nash, would have had some novelty to it just because of who was involved, but I don't think it would have had the legs that the NWO provided. And you did need, I feel you needed Hall and Nash to have that WWF presence. And Hogan was the perfect guy to turn for that role.
I wonder if he would have just turned heel, but kept the red and yellow. Like, you know, the black and white is so much an NWO thing. Would he have changed visually?
Well, also, you look at this show and your heel presence. I mean, they had a really strong heel champion in the Giant, and you had the Horsemen, who were pretty effective heels at this point too. Like, you could say that unless you had the right mix, this NWO thing affected a lot of acts in WCW at the time. The Giant certainly did not benefit, in my opinion, from the NWO angle. He became just another guy in the group before the end of the year. We continue on and finish with our man Brad from Whitby. Ever since someone requested this show, I've been hoping you guys would review it. My main highlight from watching this show is Dean Malenko. With today's mixed martial arts aware audience, the Man of a Thousand Holds gimmick needs to be brought back. The holds he did to Ray and Ray selling them were excellent. I will now question why anyone would perform a normal suplex when they could tuck their opponent's arm behind their own back and then give them a suplex. That looked like it really hurt. Have you ever given someone a Kimura suplex?
No, I haven't. No, I got to try that.
If there's anyone who can outshine Ric Flair on a promo, it's Arn Anderson. He could cut a promo on a half-eaten banana. Sting and Luger, on the other hand, could have used some help with theirs. Luger paused for so long at one point, I thought he was going to pull away Ting and say, let's restart this. And his question for Damien, if he is your guest and he is still present, What's your favorite John Pollock impression?
I'm going to say, I'm going to speak for Damien and say Gabe Sapolsky.
That might be his pick. But unfortunately, Damien fled the scene. Wouldn't even stick around to the end of the show.
Yeah. He'll be back.
All right. If you cannot tell, my voice is probably at a 2.
I can't tell. It's not that bad.
I feel my voice is leaving me at this point. It's been a long show, and it's time to wind things down, as they say, Mr. Mm-hmm. Tim. But this has been a fun show.
Yeah.
It's great
always.
When we get to catch up with Damien.
Yeah.
I do like having guests.
So
but I think it really helps when they're here with us in physical form.
Yes.
Like doing this show with someone on the phone, it's just tough.
It feels a lot more like an interview rather than a conversation. I mean, it helps that we're friends with Damien too, of course, but,
If we didn't like him, we wouldn't have brought him back.
Yeah. But I know what you're saying. Sometimes doing a interview or like a joint review over the phone feels more like a less kind of
Skype also presents problems.
Yeah. Maybe less podcasty and more like, straight up broadcast type of interview, which is good too, but just different.
So if anyone's willing to fly to Toronto.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, we're going to wrap things up next week on the show. You have planned a big review.
What?
Why don't you let everybody in on the secret? Cause I thought, man, I have no clue. That's a great idea.
We didn't even discuss it. I have no idea what we're reviewing.
Drop the charade.
Okay. Well, next week we are going to review.
He's pulling it up on his phone now.
When is, Insane Championship Wrestling debut?
This week.
Okay, you want to do one of those?
Like this week's episode?
Yeah, or if we have like even two episodes.
The first, there is a 2-hour show.
Oh, okay.
So do you want to review that?
Sure.
Okay. So next week, we are going to debut the first episode that is going to be airing on the Fight Network of Insane Championship Wrestling. ICW out of Scotland.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be airing Thursday nights at 1 a.m. Eastern time, late Thursday night. And this is worldwide. Anyone that has the Fight Network. There are no region restrictions for ICW. So that is going to debut this Thursday night. And immediately after that is British Weekly Wrestling, which follows it. So a big Thursday night block of wrestling.
What precedes it? What's that entire block? I believe is it CMLL first?
It's CMLL and AAA with, I believe, a program in between it on Thursday nights. You can go to our schedule at fightnetwork.com to get our full television schedule, which includes Ring of Honor, Impact, Paragon Pro Wrestling, ICW, British Weekly Wrestling. I keep saying that name and I want to make sure I have the proper name as I pull this up here from my own notes. British Wrestling Weekly. I apologize.
Do you know much about this weekly show that they do? Is it the same show that gets aired, in Scotland, like that they get? Is it up to date or are we starting from like a certain point?
That I don't know.
Yeah, we'll
so we're going to find out on Thursday night. I think it's just featuring like matches from their library and,
right.
and such that they're putting together for this 2-hour block.
Cool.
So there you go. Next week, we are going to... Is this the first time we've ever reviewed something that's airing on the Fight Network?
I don't know.
I think it is.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, has there ever been another wrestling? Like, the Fight Network... what wrestling has the Fight Network had outside of, you know...
We had Memphis for a while.
Yeah, we never did one of those.
We had Wrestling at the Chase for a while.
We've done ROH shows.
That's true. We did do ROH that has aired on the Fight Network.
Yeah.
Okay. That's all. ICW next week.
This is a really poor way to announce all this. I thought we did a really bad job. Are you sure you don't want to redo all that?
No. That would be insane.
Imagine if they announced the brand split. Like, hey, you feel like doing the brand split?
Mm.
And, yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Smackdown?
When was the last time we did one of those? Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Did it turn out that well?
I don't know. When is SmackDown air?
Friday?
I don't know.
Thursday?
So anyway.
Yeah, let's do that.
Yeah. Insane Championship Wrestling. Actually, a lot of people have been requesting us that we review some of these shows.
Okay, so, well, there you go. Next week we will do it. I'm looking forward to watching it.
Me too.
Should be a fun show. A lot of great talent there in ICW. So tune into that this Thursday night, 1 a.m. Eastern, on the Fight Network. And next week we will review episode numero uno.
Yeah. We'll also ask, you know, for those of you who are regular viewers of ICW, let us know what you think about the promotion in general, even if you don't get access to this particular episode. We'll just kind of treat it as an ICW in general review.
An ICW in general review.
Yeah.
Yes. Leave us your feedback. If you've ever gone to a live show, if you're a fan of the product, we want to hear from you. Lawradio.proboards.com, and we'll chat with you next week.
That was really poorly done.
Very cocky, very arrogant, but very, very effective. You see on the back, Big Bubba, no trouble. Right on the back of his sweatshirt.
And now he's choking him with his own a garment.
His own what?
Garment.
Oh.
What do you mean?
I wasn't sure what that word was.
Garment.
You said a garment.
Garment. He's got him in the corner anyway.
He sure does.
Bubba is really taking it to John Tinta.